Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
This week on Meat & Three, we're exploring the culinary wonders of urban New Jersey with a tour through Newark. We speak to Frank Mentisana at Phillips Academy Public Charter School.
This idea of family style and made from scratch lunches continues to be a bit of an anomaly in the city.
We also hear from Gil Speyer from All Points West Distillery.
Newark used to have an incredibly rich beverage alcohol history.
And we'll tour Aero Farms, the world's largest indoor vertical farm.
We're growing using 390 times more productivity than field farming and 95% less water.
Tune in to this week's Meat & Three on Heritage Radio Network to be amazed at the wonders of Newark. That's Meat plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey gang, just a quick reminder. I will be moderating a panel on chefs, drugs, and rock and roll and participating in another panel and doing interviews for this show at the Chef's Roll Anti-Conference in San Diego, California, April 8th and 9th. Tickets are available at chefsroll.com.
I'm Massimo Bottura.
Hi, this is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Huni Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs on Heritage Radio.
I think the other lucky part is that I actually knew my passion. So if you don't recognize what your passion is, kind of hard to make a leap. You know, I have friends that are just like, I don't like my job, but I don't know what I would do otherwise. I'm good at what I do. And, you know, I stand by that. I give everything I have every day to it. But there's this passion that needs to be fed. I think a lot of people are in that position. I did a lot of soul searching and reflection. Like, you know, what's worth it? What are you hungering for? What is your true desire in life?
That is Alicia Matthews, an about-to-be graduate of the Institute of Culinary Education in New York City.
I didn't, in retrospect, I just didn't realize like how much the people you cook for make such a difference. So, you know, in your old age, you realize like, oh my God, why did I waste my time over there? But, so I met with them and I was like, oh my God, they're young, they love food. So I've been with them for 5.5 years, and they're just such nice people. I'm actually only there now once a week. It did start with 3 days a week, and now they only had a little newborn baby, and now they have two kids, and, you know, just their lives have changed. So it's like one day a week. But she kind of became like my agent, and so she recommended, you know, friends.
And that is Patty Nusser, a private chef in the New York City area, and they are our guests today on a special career-changing episode of Andrew Talks to Chefs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman, and I am here with our first returning champion guest co-introducer, Julia Sexton. Welcome, Julia.
Hi, Andrew.
You're the only person who's done this twice.
I think I'm B-roll for Caitlin.
No. Well, Caitlin has the permanent guest host chair. Our co-host chair. I often bring people in for the intro, especially if they're pertinent to the subject matter. You did this with me last year, and I was cutting together this week's show, and I thought, oh my God, Julia would be the perfect person to help me introduce the show. And I texted you, what, at 8 o'clock this morning?
Yep, and I happened to be up.
And you were up and around, and 2.5 hours later, we're sitting here at the cookery in Dobbs Ferry. The same table where I did my interview for the show with Chef Dave DeBerry.
It's his grandma's table.
I did not know that till you told me this morning. That's so cute.
It's his favorite, 41.
It's great. We're at his grandma's table, table number 41, in the window. So today's show is, I don't really do thematic shows that often, but it just happened to be a coincidence, and I realized I was sitting on two interviews that both broadly fall under the subject of career changing. I've wanted for a while to start interviewing culinary students on the show. There is a student out there by the name of Alicia Matthews. She goes by the pseudonym The Foodie Engineer, which caught my eye on social media because it had turned up in the reviews for this show on iTunes and in my Instagram followers. So I thought she'd be a great first student to approach. At the age of 40, she is finishing. She's just waiting for graduation. She's done with her externship and her classes from the Institute of Culinary Education in New York City. As her pseudonym implies, she's been making a living as an engineer for a long time, but couldn't shake the cooking bug and decided to do something about it. You're nodding and smiling as I say this. I would guess there are people who listen to this show that are in the shadows. They don't write the reviews. They don't write to me, but there have to be some closet chefs out there or some wannabe or pondering career changers out there. So this episode is for you guys. I thought you would really get something out of her story. And then the other guest today is Patty Nusser, who actually is a double career changer. She was in all kinds of crazy professions before she became a cook. She worked at Babbo for years.
With David DeBarry.
With David DeBarry, who's the chef of and owner of the restaurant we're sitting in. Met her husband, Andy Nusser, who was the executive chef there at the time. And then when they started a family, she left the professional kitchen and became a private chef. She's actually one of the chefs in an article I recently wrote called The Secret Lives of Private Chefs for Taste Magazine. I'm going to drop that into our links. If you go to the link on Instagram, it has all our episodes, and I'm going to add a link to the article there.
It was a great article.
Oh, thank you. Anyway, I thought this would be an interesting double interview for our listeners, but Julie, I wanted you to join because you kind of went the other way. You career switched out of the kitchen. I should say, what's your official title? Editor-in-chief?
Editor-in-chief, yeah.
Of Edible Westchester.
Yep.
And but you made the reverse commute.
I did. I started out first I was supposed to go to graduate school and I balked. My entire family are academics and I just didn't want to teach English to kids that didn't want to learn it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I took a summer job as a waiter, and I was spectacularly bad at being a waiter. I don't believe that the customer is always right. I was, you know, surly.
Sassy. Back talk.
Surly.
Yeah.
And contemptuous.
Yeah.
The kitchen loved me.
Yeah.
And, of course, I was a lifelong cook. So they kind of absorbed me. They were like, you know, you're not really front of house people. Come back with us, you know. And that started, I don't know, God, like 12 years in kitchens.
Yeah. You liked the world? You liked that world back? You liked being on the other side of the swinging doors?
You know, when you're in your 20s and looking at graduate school, the kitchen world was incredibly seductive. You know, Anthony Bourdain's characterization of kitchen life as being on a pirate ship is absolutely true.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a lot of fun.
Yes.
A lot of it was illegal. It was just and late nights and fun times.
Yeah. Well, it's related to the pirate notion, right, because of Captain Hook. But I think of kitchens as like this, and this is unfashionable now to talk the way we're talking, but it's still true in a lot of places. I think of it as Neverland. You know, like you don't have to grow up in a kitchen in a lot of ways. You have to do your work.
Yeah.
You have to, carry your weight, but in a lot of other ways, you can kind of, you know, they can be very juvenile places.
They can be juvenile. They can be fun, exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, you play tennis, so you know the sports world. I always thought of it as team sports for arty kids.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, you're a creative person, but you're on this team.
Yeah.
You've got to execute this.
Yes.
task.
Yes.
You might hate the guy next to you.
Yes, but you're also not living with it. Even though you're earning a living, you're not having to adhere to the sort of professional norms that apply to... This is something Bourdain talked about a lot. Like, you didn't have to put on a suit and tie.
No.
You didn't necessarily have to adhere to the exact same hours as everybody else.
There were different rules.
There were different rules.
You could never call in sick.
Right, that's
and,
right. And... As Patty actually says in this interview, I alluded to a sick day, meaning like that she would cover for people if they happened to be sick.
Mm-hmm.
And she says in the interview, well, there were no sick days.
There's no sick days in food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so anyway, you talk about it because I think it's I consider myself a career. I've switched careers a bunch of times, but I always wanted to be a writer. It wasn't like I had a midlife epiphany and decided, oh, I'm going to, you know, everything else was just paying the rent, right? But you enjoyed the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to be making a living as a writer. I can even, as I'm saying this, you're smiling. There's a little glow coming over you. Can you just talk about what it takes to make a leap like that in adulthood or to even believe in yourself as because once you're on a certain path or in a certain cubbyhole, it almost feels like the world doesn't want you to change.
Yep, absolutely. But, you know, I sort of had this epiphany. I did have an epiphany after a restaurant and a chef that I worked with crashed and burned. You know, he became an alcoholic. He became bankrupt. I was in a managerial position there. And it was a wake-up call. I thought, you know, I don't really want to be doing this. And also, you know, it wasn't the best restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So my kitchen experiences were like going down in the Hindenburg every night.
Right. So you had the adrenaline piece of it without the...
Yeah. It just,
you had the valleys. You didn't have the peaks.
Right. So after all of that time that I spent cooking, I realized, you know, I love this world. I have essentially two skills. I can write... and I can cook.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't I write about food?
Mm-hmm.
And I started small in shitty publications,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I wasn't super proud of a lot of the work that I did, but it's how you get your foot in the door.
You weren't proud of the work you did, or you weren't proud of who you were doing it for?
I wasn't either. You know, you have to write to a magazine style, and for a magazine or a newspaper's reader,
yes,
who might not be the person that you really want to talk to.
Yes.
So, you know, I bounced around and did stuff I didn't necessarily love, but, you know, I'm feeling a lot better now. You finally can find your niche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's kind of like the journalist or the print equivalent of, you know, when you see people who become like anchor people on networks, and then you see their clips from regional stations, you know, or their weather person jobs when they
and
were
they're cringy.
Yeah, and they're cringy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's are.
I heard somebody said something to me. I wrote for a free paper, and somebody told me, oh, yeah, that's the paper people take out of the box to sit on at the train station when it's cold.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, but what do you think about the notion of career changing? Do you think that it is... I'll tell you, for me, there's a universal thing for anyone I know who's done it. And it's that if there is an irrepressible impulse, I really think you're not going to be happy if you don't do it. And I also feel like a lot of people have found that once they start doing it, it's like jumping into a cold swimming pool. It's never as bad as you think it's going to be. Like that worst moment is when you're in the air, and a second later, when you're in the cold water, you realize you're okay.
Right.
You know? Do you agree with that?
I do.
Feel like most people, it ends up being a gratifying thing.
I think you have to realize you're not going to swan into, you know, writing about food for the New Yorker immediately.
Yes.
And that you're going to have some cringy experiences.
Yes.
But, you know, the interesting thing is that often there are life experiences from your former career that advance you quickly. In your next.
There are more things applicable to a new career than you might realize.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's interpersonal skills, there's all that self-management, maturity. Right.
Yeah.
These things tend to be universally applicable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So with that, I'm going to introduce the first interview. again, this is Alicia Matthews. For people listening to this story, I think Alicia's trajectory is very compelling. I think it's something a lot of people can relate to. It's almost the stuff of movies, of somebody who has this passion that just won't let them go, and they finally decide to go for it. And she's doing that quite successfully. I also want to say that at a time when it's easy to think that the only measure of success is being a chef owner or being on television, there are other ways of being a cook. There are other ways of being a chef. You know, and Alicia, who's graduating from ICE at 40, a very youthful 40, a very fit 40, but nonetheless at 40, is coming to this with very realistic expectations. You'll hear in this interview, she's thinking about doing, you know, some private chefing or catering. She doesn't have an outlandish fantasy. Although, Alicia, I hope you don't mind me saying this publicly, I think you're going to exceed your own expectations. That's my guess. Anyway, with that, this is my interview with Alicia Matthews, a.k.a. the Foodie Engineer. I hope you enjoy it. From what I have read about you and, like, poking around your blog, I would define you as a career changer. Yes. Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me a little bit about how long the notion of, ooh, that was a big,
yeah.
There was a lot of emotion behind that head gesture you just made. How long the thought of wanting to cook was sort of simmering in on the back burner of your mind?
So, I'm originally from Michigan, and I moved east to work in 2005. I think the first time I looked through looking at cooking schools in New York was probably like 2007 or 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Did something happen with you and food when you came to New York, or were you already interested from your Michigan days?
Growing up, my mom and dad had a gourmet club.
Okay.
And we would help them in the kitchen to prepare, and it was like fancy.
Okay.
It was, you know, they dressed up. It was couples. It was three couples. You had to select a menu, make the food. The requirement was that you must try everything,
mm-hmm.
and no children allowed. So we were making food and then just going upstairs.
Got it.
At that point, I wasn't too interested. But when I moved out of the house,
yeah.
to work, I had to fend for myself.
And you had some cooking skills.
Yeah, and that's right about when, you know, I discovered Food Network mostly.
Okay.
And so, you know, and that was kind of the connection between me and my mom.
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about food, you know, to this day. And so doing that, I moved here and I started entertaining friends.
Okay. Were we, can I ask where you were living initially?
Initially.
Here in New York or in the tri-state area? Always New Jersey.
Always in New Jersey.
Okay.
Always in the suburb.
Uh-huh.
Central New Jersey and then to northern New Jersey.
Okay.
Now.
Uh-huh.
And so finding friends, making friends, and then, you know, discovering, well, you can make drinks and I can cook. And
mm-hmm.
we just get together as you know, girlfriends and hang out. And they're like, your food is really good. Like, and I don't like to just, you know, whip something up. I like to, you know, look at different recipes,
yeah.
and all that good stuff. And so I realized that it was my passion. I did not think anything. Otherwise, I would have started way...
Right. This gourmet club.
Mm-hmm.
What did it lean to particular types of cuisine? Did it move all over the place? What was the
I recall mostly
MO.
French.
Mostly French.
I
classic.
Mostly French, yep.
Okay. So you and did your parents have like a real, did they have good palates? Like were you learning like seasoning and this is like, did you have a sense when you reached adulthood of like, because I think a lot of times people who like to cook,
mm-hmm.
it's not necessarily given that they've eaten really good food, right? So it's like, how do you develop a palate unless you're just lucky? But do you feel like you came into adulthood sort of knowing how food should taste?
I think for the most part. My dad is from the Caribbean.
Okay.
So obviously the flavors of that are a little more complex than, you know, just regular mm-hmm. American food. My mom is from Detroit, but she has roots in the South, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I discovered when I came to school that she does not season as far as salt goes as much as everyone else.
Okay.
And she pointed that out to me because I was like, Mom, the chefs keep saying that I'm not seasoning enough. And she's like, you know, I didn't really season a lot. You know, I held back on the salt.
Was that a nod to health concerns?
Exactly. She was in the health industry.
Oh, so she knows.
Yeah.
Most people don't know this. Whether or not you have a problem, mm-hmm. the recommended allowance of sodium per mm-hmm. day mm-hmm. is like 2,300 milligrams, which is a teaspoon of salt.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have diabetes, mm-hmm. if you had heart issues, like sometimes you're supposed to even have less. But, for someone who's...
It's like, why eat?
Right, that's nothing. Uh-huh. I mean, in a professional kitchen, sure, that's absolutely. Like, it wouldn't even register. Okay.
Yeah, so I knew of, you know, it wasn't foreign to me to have rabbit or, you know, things like that.
Right. And so, salt aside, you kind of had a sense, like, what the bullseye was when you were working a dish toward...
Correct, because I had friends that would be like, need salt. Really? Okay.
Yeah. I told you this before we started recording. Your pseudonym, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. the foodie engineer,
right.
caught my attention. Mm-hmm. You're working as an engineer?
So, yes. I'm as far as school goes, I graduated from Michigan State mm-hmm. in mechanical engineering.
And what drove you toward, was that just a practical decision, like a something where to make a living, or did you have some kind of a passion for some aspect of that?
Well, my mom was focused on education, big mm-hmm. education. She majored in, I think she has a master's in education.
Okay.
And so she, on weekends, there was a program called Detroit Area Pre-College Engineering Program.
Okay.
And it was to help you, you know, with your science classes, your math classes, just trying to get a leg up and mm-hmm. make sure that you're on track. And it was, you know, preparation for college.
Yeah.
And in that, they would always have engineers come in and explain what they do. It's in Detroit, automotive industry.
Sure.
So I was like, okay, well, that seems fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then the crash happened right when I graduated.
Okay.
And so I ended up working for DuPont, for a chemical company.
Got it. Okay.
And so that kind of got me into the engineering industry.
Got it. But was there something about engineering that, it's weird, because you're actually... I think the third guest we've had mm-hmm. who had definitely Alexander Harris, who's at
an engineer.
I don't know if you heard that show. He's at Emma's Torch in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually blanking on somebody that was on very recently who had also started down that path. But you're the third person. Mm-hmm. I don't think that could be a coincidence because yeah. on the surface it seems so different, but there's got to be something that applies.
Well, I think. It's a lot of thinking on your feet as far mm-hmm. as problem solving. I work in the manufacturing industry, always have. It's not been R&D. It's mm-hmm. always been, you know, we've got customers to meet demands,
mm-hmm.
orders coming in. So I think it's that. I think it's, you know, that just the way engineers think is mm-hmm. similar to the way cooks think because we might have to tweak something. Is everything okay? If something goes wrong, how do we prevent it from happening again? You know, we talk about prep and mise en place and all these things and making sure that's lean. That's, you know, 5S.
So what do you mean 5S? What's 5S?
It's, sort. It's like a way to eliminate waste.
Okay.
And be as efficient as possible.
Got it.
So you sort. By the end, it's sustained.
Okay.
You're able to repeat it regularly.
Got it. Okay.
So you're clearing it out. You're organizing it. You're labeling things.
So this kind of connects. This connects with the practical side of cooking, mm-hmm. right? Whereas, like you see a lot of people who used to be musicians, right,
mm-hmm.
find
yeah.
their way to cooking.
Yeah.
That makes obvious sense because it's
creative.
The creative. This mm-hmm. is sort of the practical, organizational,
yeah,
et cetera,
sure.
The structure, mm-hmm. all that stuff. That
yeah,
makes
I,
okay.
I like structure.
Thank you. All right, you just cleared something up for me because okay. It's always seemed like such a polar opposite
mm-hmm.
to me. Okay, so you said your first. Notion of doing this was mm-hmm. what about a little more than 10 years ago
mm-hmm. yeah.
How was it something that kind of flitted in and out of your head? Was it like what how long was it percolating before you actually really thought about it as a something you might do?
When I know exactly when I really thought about it. In 2015 I was living in Georgia, in Valdosta, Georgia, with no family, no long, friends of history. I was making, you know, friends at work and things like that. But it was really, I moved out there for my job.
It was a transfer situation?
Correct.
Okay.
I got relocated. And it was hot outside. There wasn't, it was a very small town. So if I went anywhere, my employees were there too.
Okay.
And so I just ended up experimenting in the kitchen and taking it to work.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a gentleman there that was like, have you thought about going to school? And I'm like, you know, I cook. And then at some point, my sister sent me an email, and it was Rachel Ray's tuition competition show. So they, you know, if you win, you go to New York and you go to school at ICC.
Yeah, this was tuition at a different school. That's the ICC, which used to be the FCI.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, usually I would say, Renee, leave me alone.
Okay.
Because I'm the introvert and she is the extrovert. She likes TV and all that fun stuff. And I'm just like, no, then I'd have to be on TV if I won. No, thank you. So I, you know, at some point I just said, well, I don't have anything else to do in Georgia.
Right.
To cook. And,
right.
You know, so I may as well make this video and send it in. You know, what's the harm?
What did you have to do for the audition video?
We had to explain why we wanted to go to the school,
mm-hmm.
Cook a dish.
Like do a demo on camera?
Yeah.
Okay. What'd you cook? Do you remember?
I made baby lamb chops, cauliflower puree, and like shredded Brussels sprouts or something. So I did that. I sent it in. And I got a call on my way to lunch one day from work. And they were like, you're a finalist for, or no, I was top 20. And, you know, you're in the running kind of thing. They called me back like another month later or a couple weeks later and was like, you're top 10 or something. And then they called back and said, okay, so in order to get to top 3, you got to go through this interview process. So they called me and make sure you have a personality.
Right.
Eventually you might have to be on TV.
Right.
And then I had to apply to the school and submit an essay.
Okay.
And the chefs there would review the essay and pick kind of who.
Okay.
And sure enough, they called and said I was top 3. And I was going to New York, and, you know, everything was like secret, you know, we don't know where we're going kind of thing.
But uh-huh.
I ended up at the school and meeting Jacques Pepin. And it was,
yeah, there's
it
a
was
very
incredible.
Charming picture of you and Jacques Pepin on your blog.
Mm-hmm. He was, oh my goodness, the nicest guy.
Do you consider, are you a Francophile when it comes to food? Is French your sort of default? Is that the thing
not
that really...
Not on purpose, but maybe I'm just drawn to...
You're drawn
that
to that the most.
Because I like pretty plates.
Uh-huh.
I don't really see French food that's messy.
Right. Right.
So I'm drawn to that. But,
okay.
You know, my eyes are open to, you know, other things because I see other,
yeah.
you know, chefs doing different,
yeah.
Different cuisines.
Got
and,
it.
And making great.
So you go through that process.
Mm-hmm.
How was it? Is because can I say, I don't want to embarrass you. Tell me if you don't want me to say this, I'll cut it out.
Okay.
No, but like when we met today, you were even a little shy about doing this,
mm-hmm.
right? And you and I are sitting in a classroom.
Right.
At a place where you went to school,
yes.
It's just us, there's no video uh-huh. component. You were in front of an audience on Rachel Ray.
Yeah,
so did you surprise yourself? Do you feel like you held your own okay? You
Absolutely.
Feel like the adrenaline got you through? Like, what was that experience like?
You know, at that moment, it was like, what do you have to lose? And, you know, what is the big deal?
Mm-hmm.
These people don't know. You know, they're here to learn too, and
right.
they're just here to watch too.
Yeah.
And so, and that was kind of how I looked at the competition too. It was just like, you know what, if I win, I win. But kind of halfway through, I was like, if I don't win, I'm doing this.
Really?
I am going.
Now, what is halfway through? You mean halfway through that day?
Like, it was 2 days.
Okay.
So we
somewhere in the middle there,
for one
like
day,
right,
and then we were at the studio for the next.
So like you're lying in bed the night between, and you're like, this is going to happen.
I mean, I did well on it.
Yeah.
I just didn't win.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I was second, but I don't know.
Okay. So what when you finally decide to go to cooking school?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's a huge commitment.
Yeah.
It's a huge commitment on top of. You know, just time wise, on top of a job.
Yeah.
I don't want money is huge. I don't want to I don't want to say it on the air. I don't want to be rude, but you recently mentioned your, you know, your birthday Instagram.
No, I'm 40.
Okay, you're 40.
That's fine.
Right. So you're not
I'm with 40.
You know, I would not have put you at 40. But you you know, you're not 25 years old.
Right.
You're working a job.
Mm-hmm.
You're dragging yourself to this facility, mm-hmm. you know, on the weekends. That is a real endurance test.
Sure.
It has to be.
With a full-time job, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Even just mentally.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
But, you know, the way I looked at it was when I come in the kitchen, I didn't worry about anything. Like, I could have the most stressful... Because sometimes I would go to my job prior just to make sure everything was good,
mm-hmm.
and drive directly to class
yeah.
at 7, you know, to get here at 7 so I can avoid the, you know, traffic and all this stuff. And I would forget the issues that I was dealing with at my job because I was like, wow, this really must be my passion.
It took you out of your own head.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You had that sort of, you listen to the show, so mm-hmm. forget, I have to stop doing it. But it's all, there's always a tennis comparison. When I set foot on a tennis court, mm-hmm. if my, I could have a book deadline 2 days away. For that 2 hours I'm competing, there is nothing else in the world outside of those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
That's
that was this for you.
And the phone would ring, because I keep my cell phone for work all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes the phone would ring, and I'm like, oh. You know, that kind of wake you up like, oh, reality. Let me step out real quick and deal with that and come back. And, you know, it was a tough juggle.
So
don't get me wrong.
When you come in to do, when you decide to go to school,
mm-hmm.
Was the goal to get out of your engineering life and to be a professional, to go professional? Was that?
I think eventually.
Yeah.
So I'm not like the risk taker of like, forget it. Forget everything, and I'll put everything in storage. I'll sell it all, whatever.
Right?
No.
Get in a van, drive across.
You know, she got. She was her position was eliminated, and so she just started becoming entrepreneur. Just
wow.
Like that.
Older or younger sister?
Older, two
okay.
and a half years.
Okay.
So, you know, as much as I try to convince myself to do, I can't.
Yeah.
That's not me.
Got it.
And it wouldn't. I don't think it would work out just because that's not me.
Okay.
So instead, I'm like, okay, well, I know that I want to go and I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the ultimate goal is to, you know, run my own catering company and do some personal chef work. How will I get there? And I'm still working on that path. But I knew that culinary school was one of the things I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I know it's not necessary, but it was one of the things I wanted to do.
But I assume it was also probably to get you from point A to point B mm-hmm. while you were in a full-time job,
correct.
It was probably way more efficient than volunteering in some kitchen
exactly.
where you're going to be limited to whatever their prep list is. I mean, here you worked your way through a mm-hmm. curriculum. I've seen it on your blog.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, you worked your way through a culinary curriculum,
mm-hmm.
so you now have a foundation
exactly.
that... I mean, maybe you haven't made everything, but you could sure. certainly look at a recipe for probably anything,
mm-hmm.
do a trial run, and then the second time it'll be pretty much on the money.
Yeah, no, you're exactly, that's the exact thought process, and that's what I'm saying. Engineering mind, it's like point A to point B, how am I going to get there?
Right, right.
So I thought about school, and I thought about, well, if I was 18, 19, 25, and 25 is kind of up there to start in the industry too,
yeah.
from what I hear from a lot of people. So if I was younger, I probably wouldn't pursue culinary school.
You would have just gone to work.
I would have gone to a restaurant
mm-hmm.
and gotten experience there.
Mm-hmm.
I respect that totally. But at the age that I am now and the where I am in my career,
yeah.
it just made more sense to me to go to culinary school.
So when I hear you say catering and private chefing,
mm-hmm.
Couple of things occur to me. One is, it seems to me, again, that's the engineering brain, right? That's probably more practical at 40
yep.
than some Hollywood idea of you're going to become like a huge chef. Although you probably could become a chef
sure.
if you wanted to really
mm-hmm.
put your mind and body through
yeah,
the ringer.
Exactly.
You might be able to get an executive
mm-hmm.
chef gig or open your own place
sure.
at like, you know, 50-something
right.
when most people are trying to like,
wrap
start resting their back and their knees
right.
and everything else. But But it also says to me that, you know, you've said it a few times already, you have this passion to cook. Mm-hmm. So the idea that you could make a living doing that, even if it isn't in the spotlight,
right.
even if it isn't getting your name maybe in the paper, mm-hmm. Even if, well, I mean, you've been on Rachel Ray, people listen to this show. But, I mean, you know, probably you're not going to be, you know, on the cover or something or winning, you know, Food & Wine Best New Chefs doing, like, mm-hmm. catering gigs. But you could spend your time doing something that on just a, you know, like almost on a primal level mm-hmm. makes you happy. Exactly. Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
So however it is you're doing it, mm-hmm. if you were cooking, even if it's cooking for a family or mm-hmm. cooking for, you know, bringing on the staff and do, you know, knocking out a wedding for people, that would satisfy you.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, what would ease my... Because I thought that easing this this need to cook was like, okay, well, you could go to some cooking classes here and there. Right. And I did.
And cook on the weekend.
Yeah. But yeah. I was just like, nope, that's not enough.
Okay.
So that brought me here.
You know, I look at your blog, mm-hmm. and we just met, so just tell me if I'm dead wrong.
Okay.
But it, you know, I don't like to throw around words like spiritual mm-hmm. or, you know, but it really seemed, you use the word journey all the time.
Oh, my goodness.
What? You use it a lot in yes. your blog. A mm-hmm. lot.
I mean, I think about it. It is, yeah, it's definitely a journey.
You know, you talk about, do you use the word evolution or transformation?
You talk transformation.
You talk about mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. These are powerful words, mm-hmm. Especially when one's speaking of themselves, mm-hmm. right? Did your whole sort of, like, disposition toward getting up in the morning change when you made the step of starting going to school?
Absolutely. So when I moved from back, because I was in New Jersey prior mm-hmm. to Georgia, moved back to New Jersey, and the reason I moved back to New Jersey was strictly to go to culinary school in New York. I remember going into my boss's office and saying, here's my letter of resignation. Please don't try to convince me to stay. I don't want to. I want to go back to New Jersey. You know, at that point, I didn't tell her why, but she knew I was on Rachel Ray. We actually went and did like a watch party.
A viewing
together,
party?
Had lunch
nice.
Me, her, and several other uh-huh. people from my job. So she knew, but she was like, were you really going to leave? Because I, you know, you had to commit to kind of, and it's yeah. like, I'll cross that bitch when I get there. But
right.
at this point, right. if I win.
Right.
So, you know, at that point, I went in, resigned, and said, I'm going, and please don't try to talk to me, because they would offer more money, and no thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth it at this point.
Mm-hmm. What are the things that you love to cook the most? Like, I saw you talk about how surprised you were that pastry, what did you say, pastry was your jam?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that was a surprise to you.
That was a fear. Pastry...
Because it's so specific.
It's such a fear for... Well, because I'm not a chemical engineer. I'm
yeah,
a chemical
right.
engineer.
I don't bake. We have dinner parties. Mm-hmm. I do savory. My wife loves to bake.
Gotcha.
And my daughter loves to bake. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of it.
Yeah. Oh, I was fearful.
It's hard to pull a rescue mm-hmm. in a baking situation.
But then I, you know, I watch the baking shows and all mm-hmm. these things, and I'm just like... I don't know if I could do it. So when we got into it, and, you know, they kind of ease you in
yeah.
because they know you're culinary students.
Yes.
I wasn't that bad. And I kind of liked it.
Okay.
You know, so, pastry, that's not my favorite, but that was my surprise.
Okay.
In culinary school.
What did you love to, before cooking school even, like mm-hmm. what, between leaving the family house, mm-hmm. you know, when you were cooking these things that your friends were saying, you're pretty good. What was it? What were you cooking? What were the things that just people, you know, blew their mind?
I have a friend, Celia, that she always asks for panna cotta. And I'm like, it wasn't that big of a deal. But she loves it. You know, a lot of times I just experiment and jump from recipe to recipe
mm-hmm.
without repeating.
But you would nail it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I should include it, this story that my friend... So coming to ICE,
mm-hmm.
Initially, when I didn't win Rachel Ray, I was like, I'm going to ICC. No, that's where I need to go because that's where I was supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't end up having a program that would fit my schedule.
Okay.
And so when I realized that between discussions with me and my manager, rather than delay it like it was suggested.
Yeah.
It was like, delay.
it took me 30-something years right. to get to this point.
No. Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, how do we make it work?
Because yeah.
I gotta go. And yeah. so I called my friend as soon as my boss left my office and was like, girl, he said it's not a good idea right now.
Uh-huh.
And she's typing on the computer like, I'm finding another place. Okay, there's an open house on Thursday. This Thursday, let's go to ICE. And we ended up there, and I applied right then.
Wow. Can we just say the coincidence? There's an open house going on
yeah.
as we're sitting right here now, doing this interview.
And a gentleman was asking me about the school, and I was like, oh, yeah, I've done that too.
Oh, you mean when you left the room earlier?
No, when I was waiting in
went downstairs.
Security, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you just talk for a minute? Because I have to think, I don't hear from them that much.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think that there are closet career changers out there, mm-hmm. that there are people out there who like want to do it. They're thinking about it. Maybe they're in their late 20s, early 30s. Maybe they're even in their 40s. It seems daunting. It seems undoable. Can you just speak? Maybe you have done this in your own life, but can you mm-hmm. speak? I don't mean to say, you know, in the second person,
right.
but can you just speak to that, as someone who took the leap, as someone who did it, mm-hmm. you know, was it harder than you thought? Was it easier than you thought? What was the experience of it like?
I mean, obviously the financial commitment was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably would not have done it if I had to borrow money to
mm-hmm.
do it. I just, you know, I wanted to do it without hurting myself
mm-hmm.
financially.
Do you have to sacrifice to do it? Like, did you have to really tighten the...
Well, luckily, I was in Valdosta, Georgia, as an engineer. So, as an okay. operations manager.
So you had some money in the bank.
Yeah. So I was lucky in that way. I think the other lucky part is that I actually knew my passion.
Yeah.
So if you don't recognize what your passion is, it's kind of hard to make a leap.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends that are just like, I don't like my job, but I don't know what I would do otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm good at what I do. And, you know, I stand by that. I give everything I have every day to it. But there's this passion that needs yeah. to be fed. And
yes.
so I think a lot of people are in that position. What I would say, I did a lot of soul searching and reflection, like, you know, what's worth it? What are you hungering for? What is your true desire
mm-hmm.
in life? In 'cause work-life balance, they talk about it all the time in corporate America, but it's so important.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about the young people that are passing away of heart attacks, and, you know, they look like the picture of health, and they had all these plans. So it's like, if not now, when?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I came to, is like, you got to make a decision. Do you want it? If you don't, just leave it on the table and walk away.
Right. So can you give me, like, was there a low point in doing it where the schedule started to seem overwhelming, or it was just really hard to get here after a day? I mean, was there a moment like that? And then also, was there a high point where you were, you know, just almost dancing out of here at the end of a day or something?
Quite honestly, I was probably dancing every weekend, but I think the low point, it's honestly, the low point is when I have to wake up in the morning and had to go to the manufacturing facility that I work at.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, kind of be in a rush to be like, okay, is everything okay? Okay, gotta go. You know, so I can be on time, because there's a lot of responsibility in the kitchen too, you
yeah.
know, as far as expectations from the chef instructors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to set up your kitchen and all this stuff, and your teams are relying on you. So it's like two teams are, you know,
right.
pulling you in two directions.
Right.
And, you know, not everybody knows in my main job that I'm in culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
Most people didn't know.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, even going towards the end, I had to start telling people, because it was like, I need you to make sure that this is done, because I got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll bring you food.
Right.
When I come back.
Right.
And that was kind
okay.
of the way it worked. So nothing suffered.
Okay.
I tell the folks now in leadership in my company that had I not done it, I probably would have been gone. Because things were getting so hectic at my job. It was becoming more demanding as far as just emotion. And
mm-hmm.
it was just... It was trying times at the plant. Put it that way.
Personnel,
all that stuff. So this place was my sanity.
Yeah.
And you've got to have that balance in your life. Yeah. Otherwise, something's got to give.
Yeah. Do you wish you'd done it sooner? Do you wish you'd found the gumption or whatever you want to call it?
So I hate regrets, but had I recognized my passion sooner,
mm-hmm.
we had what's it called in the high school where you can, there's like...
Career fair?
Not career fair, but you can go work kind of a culinary leg.
Like a vocational thing?
Yeah, that's okay. It's vocational. So there was that opportunity, but, you know, at that time, most people looked at that as like, oh, that's where the burnouts go, or that's
mm-hmm.
where the... So perception was huge, obviously, at that age.
Yeah.
And so it's like, plus I had no desire at that point.
Uh-huh.
I wish I went in 2008.
When you first,
mm-hmm.
yeah, when you
because
first started
I even
looking.
At CIA at that point.
Really?
Yeah. And then ICE, I went to the old campus.
Yeah.
And ICC, I had visited too.
Okay. So you really had the bug.
Mm-hmm. And I went by myself at that point.
Yeah.
I don't think I even told anybody.
Can I ask? It's. I mean, cooking school, people who haven't done it, mm-hmm. I did the law technique course at FCI,
okay.
when it used to be the FCI,
mm-hmm.
on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you hear cooking school, you don't think of it this way. But going to cooking school, it is like walking into a kitchen, right?
Absolutely.
And, I mean, it's kitchen classrooms for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Ours was all kitchen class.
Yeah. Well, somebody once said to me, I never took a class sitting down, which I thought was perfect. But you know, it's there is this vibe. It's not as intense as going into a professional kitchen,
sure.
but you don't want to embarrass yourself.
Absolutely.
You don't want to make a mistake. You don't want to ask a dumb question.
You need to take it seriously.
Yeah. Was there, and you've talked about, you have an element of shyness to you.
Mm-hmm.
Was that part of what held you back, do you think? Do you think that you were a little hesitant to just walk into a foreign situation mm-hmm. with knives and burners and a bunch of people you never met and maybe mm-hmm. embarrass yourself?
I don't think I thought I'd be embarrassed, but you almost just want to stay in your lane. This is the path you chose. Just focus and, you know, climb
right.
that corporate ladder.
Right. And you at the home kitchen, you were on top of it, right?
Yeah.
Like that was
mm-hmm.
that was like a
right.
happy place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so there was no risk involved.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
But learning the techniques, I knew that it wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It would only... Becoming a personal chef or something, it just helps.
Yeah.
In you know, saying, hey, I have been taught something.
Yes. Okay, so you're at the end of this year. You when we met, you told me you hadn't been in this... We're sitting here in March. You hadn't been in this building since October.
Yeah.
You've been doing your externship for the Union Square Hospitality Group. That's mm-hmm. Danny Meyer's company. You
uh-huh.
sit in their events
yeah.
team or
mm-hmm.
events group.
It's funny, I passed it driving here on the West Side Highway.
Can you just talk about what that's been like for you?
So...
To put your newfound...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you always could cook, but to put your newfound... skills, expertise, professional level training to the test.
So the way that they, you know, I went the first day and it was legit, you're on veg prep. So for
sink or swim.
Large parties, small parties, you know, at this point I'm not speedy. So I'm kind of going at a decent pace, but
mm-hmm.
definitely not as fast as everyone else. So I recognize where I had gaps, you know, the opportunities.
Yeah.
And it was funny because when I got there, well, a little midway through, I was talking to somebody and they're like, oh, I'm, you know, looking to leave. And I'm like, why? She's like, I want to be a nurse. I was like, oh, everybody's not into this. Like, I,
right.
you know what I mean? It's like,
this
oh,
was
this
her engineering
like,
job.
Exactly. I was just like dicing whatever. I was dicing like, oh my gosh, everybody's not. So I start looking around, you know.
Right.
It's funny. You can tell who wants to be there and who doesn't. I can
you
tell
can?
My regular job.
Just the vibe.
Oh yeah. Mhm. But Union Square. It was a great experience. I wasn't in a, you know, hot kitchen in a restaurant. Probably would have preferred it only because it's a it's the high speed. You know, mm-hmm. the biggest thing you want to learn is speed and consistency. So going to Union Square events was, you know, obviously it's more in path with what I want to do anyway.
Right.
So, but I'd like to say that I had the experience of working in a restaurant. Not too late, but I'd like to say
just not necessarily do it for 6 months or a year, but right. you'd like, what? Why? You want to see if you could do it?
Yeah. Yeah. At this point, it's a lot of proving things like, oh, wow, you can be on Rachel Ray and not, you know, crap your pants.
Uh-huh. So you want to see if you could hack it on a hotline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could do that if you wanted to.
I'm sure
to.
I could. I'm sure I will, actually.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. I plan to do that. But, yeah, getting back to the catering kitchen, I think the biggest thing that I learned was just the consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And every customer, that organization treats those parties yeah. like I see folks treating the individual customers mm-hmm. in Union Square Cafe or, you know,
right.
it's like, what are you doing? Would you eat that kind of thing?
Yeah.
It's definitely not as high pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But you could tell the urgency mm-hmm. when the chefs were like under the gun.
Yeah. So you recently treated yourself to dinner at Per Se.
Yes. Yeah, and so
what was that?
The other
was
there
engineer was that your birthday?
No.
No.
My friend said it was hers.
Okay.
I was like, no, I'm not lying.
Yeah. But it was funny because then you guys made the, for people who don't know, Thomas Keller has this famous canapé. Mm-hmm. He calls it a cornet. It's yep. a little ice, basically an ice cream cone mm-hmm. with, creme fraiche and salmon and minced red onion. And yep. Yeah. So, but you guys ended up making that here.
Yeah, like the week after.
But what was the meal like for you?
You know, so when you think of French food, honestly, I'm apprehensive sometimes because some things are a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But we sat down and there was not a bite I didn't like. And so, I've gone to several restaurants that are fine dining and, you know, the first one was kind of nerve wracking, but after you get, you know, then you realize, oh, this money commitment, it's really worth it.
You think
and
it was worth it?
It's hard to convince people.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's hard to convince people that it's worth it, but I guess if you don't have the passion for food or, you know, you eat to live, then, yeah, that's a complete waste of your money.
Well, I mean, it's very fashionable right now to mm-hmm. sort of say nothing's worth that much money.
Right.
You know, to be honest.
The service.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I personally, once in a while I love a meal like that, but mm-hmm. I'm not a crazed foodie. I'm really not. It's okay. really weird.
Mm-hmm. That is very weird.
Well, because I'm, but I'm more interested. Like, I'd rather interview you than go eat dinner somewhere.
Gotcha.
For real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there are people I know that like they save up their vacations are built around restaurants. Mm-hmm. I saw it. I got to trail at the French Laundry at one point for a book I was writing.
I just heard that. I just heard you say that on something.
Well, I was writing a book about the Bocuse d'Or.
Okay.
And it was the year that Tim Hollingsworth competed, mm-hmm. and he at the time was a sous chef at the French Laundry. Sure. So I was all of a sudden I was around the French Laundry, mm-hmm. and I saw the people come back for a kitchen tour, mm-hmm. and it was so sweet. I mean, it was these people who clearly, they weren't wearing expensive clothes.
Sure.
They were so excited to be there. Mm-hmm. They could barely get a syllable out if they met Keller, you know?
Right.
And I don't know why anyone feels a need to criticize those people.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah.
if that's what they was.
Yeah.
Some people spend all their money on, mm-hmm. You know, on fancy cars mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. clothes
yeah.
or whatever.
Or an actual activity. You know?
An activity or
yeah.
no one blinks if you say you're going to spend it on a glass, like an amazing bottle of wine.
Sure.
Nobody blinks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great.
Yeah. No, I enjoy it. You know, it's not an everyday thing.
Yeah.
I'm an engineer, not a billionaire.
Right.
But
you have no regrets.
No, not at all.
I think
because I was in school here when I went, and
yeah.
I told them, and they were, you know, so they gave us a tour of the kitchen and
oh, nice.
Asked questions, and why wouldn't you work here, and, you know, all this stuff. But I appreciate it more
mm-hmm.
after doing, you know.
You have more of an understanding of what it takes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, graduation is coming up in May.
Yes.
Can I ask, do you know what you're doing to celebrate?
I don't know. People are saying I should cook for them. I'm like, why should I cook for my graduation?
I disagree. We just met.
I'm like, we should.
I disagree.
We should go to because it's in the morning. So I'm like, okay. I guess it's brunch on a Tuesday. Mm. But my parents will be in town from Michigan.
Oh, nice.
For my graduation.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a whole another. So it's like, you're gonna do what? Well, you're not gonna quit your job, are you? You know, when I decided to go to college. So I. You know what? Let me back up. I think that might have been my hesitation also.
Your parents?
Yeah. You know, my sister's a doctor. I'm an engineer. You go down this path.
Yep.
My sister got laid off from her job.
Yeah.
And just decided she didn't want to work in hospitals. So I'm like, no, that's not me. So following the path that I created myself, because
yes.
It's not like they forced me into engineering.
Yes.
It's like, okay, keep going, you know.
Right.
You've been at DuPont for 15 years. Like.
Right.
So then, you know, that's when I quit DuPont to work at another place.
Sure.
So that I could come back to New
York. Yeah. I'm sure you've heard this from other people. The parental concern about a child going into a kitchen
mm-hmm.
is still,
yeah.
even with all the money now people make, mm-hmm. it's still out there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They take some convincing, quite
yeah.
honestly. I think that's what, because they wholeheartedly support everything we do at this point. I mean, they
right.
always supported, but it was like, when I got on Rachel Ray, it was like, oh, can you bring someone?
right.
Like, what, Mom?
Right. That's pretty funny.
And then when I came here, you know, every weekend they're calling, okay, what'd you make? Or before I even leave, I'm
yeah.
like, Mom, can I get home first?
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
still on the train.
Because yeah.
I would take the train
yeah.
Sometimes, or most of the time. But yeah, so, you know, after a while they get on board and,
okay.
and start supporting. So my mom helped a caterer this past weekend
mm-hmm.
and called me and was like, wow, that work is hard, and you gotta keep up the pace, and da da da.
Right.
You know, she's empathizing with, you know, what I went through. And
it's great. So it's great that they're coming for the graduation.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think I'm like most likely to succeed or something. So then I'm like, oh, pressure.
You already know that.
The class.
They told you that?
Yeah, the class voted and the chefs voted and stuff. So I'm like, okay, well, there's pressure.
Okay. I can say congratulations then?
Sure.
You're done with your externship?
I am.
So you're just waiting for the date?
For graduation.
So
yeah.
I can say congratulations on graduating?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for doing this.
No problem. Thank you for having
me. I hope it was okay.
A big deal.
Yeah?
I mean, yeah, I follow the podcast, I read the book, like, yeah.
Well,
I mean, yeah.
I was glad you said yes when I wrote to you. I'm sure I'll say this in the intro, but I just DM'd you. I recognized you had written a very nice review.
Mm-hmm.
Your pseudonym sticks in one's head.
That's good. That's the first time I've heard that.
So and then,
good.
Oh, it does.
Yeah,
I have a whole theory. I think it's kind of an alter ego, isn't it? I think it's an alter ego for you.
Yeah, but I don't want it to be Mad Scientist.
No, I don't mean that, but
yeah.
I just mean it's not your actual name.
Sure.
It's like this other you,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's like you talked about the transformation.
Yeah.
It's like a superhero.
I was just thinking about Clark
yeah.
Kent.
Yeah, but that's what it feels like to
yeah.
me. I feel like that's the you that you're working toward.
Absolutely.
You know?
No, you're right on.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, well, I feel like you're almost there.
I feel like it.
If not there.
I feel like I'm closer.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Congrats. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kotbalk cave-aged cheeses, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
Are you enjoying our podcast? Heritage Radio Network has lots more. I'm Ethan Frisch.
And I'm Jenny Dorsey.
And together we host Why Food, a podcast about innovators, career changers, and entrepreneurs who are changing the face of food.
How did these folks decide to hit the brakes, start over, and become inspiring chefs, entrepreneurs, farmers, and activists they are today?
Browse episodes of Why Food wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to the show. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Alicia Matthews. I do want to say her blog is available to the public. It is foodieengineer.com. There's dispatches from her time in cooking school. If you want to get a sense of what cooking school is like for a career changer, she kind of tracked it there. Not like a daily journal, but periodic updates. There's photos. She's pretty honest about everything. I think you would enjoy looking at it, and she has a mailing list. So check that out if you feel like it. And if you have a catering business in the tri-state area, I dare say you could do worse than to give her a shot on some Saturday in the coming days if you want to, if you need to staff up. Okay, now, Patty Nusser. Do you know Patty Nusser?
You know, we sort of play together on social media, but I never met her. I know that she admires Krennet bowls as I do, so we sort of bond on Instagram about mid-century bowls.
Okay, well, that's something. this is why I say I'm a chef writer, not a food writer. That is like Greek to me. But so Patty Nusser, you know, Patty, we're all this, we have this little food community up here in the hills. We're like 18 miles from New York City. It's a stone's throw, really. This little pocket of Westchester that we all live in. Well, your current issue has some Westchester food people.
Absolutely.
Tagging their favorite, go-to spots to eat. And
it's our map of the stars.
The map of the stars.
So yeah.
I was flattered to be included. Jeff Gordner from Esquire is one of the people who opines. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Benno.
Yep. Drew Nieperent.
Drew Nieperent is in there. And these are all people.
Ruth Reichel.
Ruth. These are all people who live, you know, in...
In the Hudson Valley.
Ruth's north.
Yeah.
But everyone else is... within 15 minutes of where we're sitting right now. And Patty is part of that community, mm-hmm. along with her husband Andy, who, as I mentioned before, used to be the executive chef at Babbo. He currently has Casa Mono and Bar Hamon, and
Terry Lodge.
You don't have to. I know it. Julia was like mouthing it to me to cover me. That was so nice of you. Thank you for getting my back. The Terry Lodge in it's not in Terrytown though. It's the Terry Lodge in Portchester,
New Haven, and in Fairfield County.
Yeah.
I think it's in Westport.
The Terry Lodge, and Andy's a very gifted chef, but Patty
and fun,
and Patty, who you'll hear it in this interview. She had this, just like these lost years of making a living as a professional, and anyone who knows her now, the idea that she was never doing something like working in a kitchen or something expressive is almost staggering. She's a very, she's a very confident person. She's funny as hell. The thought of her doing some of, like, computer programming and some of these jobs you're going to hear about just blows my mind. But she eventually found her way to the pro kitchen. And then she, when they started having kids, wanted to have time with her kids. So went the way of private chefing, which is something more and more people are doing these days as a way out of professional kitchens. It used to be a way, but it used to be sort of an entryway to cooking professionally.
Right.
Like a lot of people who did private chef or catering jobs went, oh, this is fun. I'm gonna see about, maybe I'll go to cooking school. Maybe I'll go work in professional.
It was entry level sort of.
Yeah, it was like a gateway.
It was a gateway
job. Mm-hmm. But it's now becoming sort of like an exit strategy for people. And sometimes people like in their 30s. Anyway, I thought Patty's story would be interesting. Some of this is a little bit of a window into my life, so I apologize for that, but we are friends and neighbors and had never really talked about certain things, so she was finding things out about my wife, Caitlin. I was finding things out about her that we didn't know because most of our conversation up here tends to be around our kids. Mm-hmm. Our sons happen to be very close friends. But I think you'll really enjoy this interview with Patty. I do want to make one personal footnote, which I hope will not be bothersome to Patty or to Andy. But I do have to say the name Mario Batali comes up several times in this interview. And for anybody who is surprised by that, I just need to say that, you know, there are at least dozens, Julia, would you say, of people much more prominent than, you know, Patty and Andy, who had longstanding relationships with Mario,
yeah,
whose professional childhoods were intertwined with Mario's. And I'm only saying this because I've gotten notes from people that can't believe Mario's name survived the edit on my book last year. You know, he was around. He was around long before these stories were known.
And he was a massive figure.
And he was a big figure in the industry. So when I do have people on, Dave DeBerry, whose restaurant we're sitting in right now, mm-hmm, talked about his Bobo days when, yeah, he was on the show. We're telling the stories of my guests, and I don't feel the need to ask for their commentary on that. I don't feel the need to have his deeds intrude on their lives any more than they already have. So that's my feeling about it. So anyone who is wondering why I didn't ask questions about what's been in the news or ask these people to comment or share what they know, it's just not what this show's about. This show's about the story of my guests. And like I said, I'd prefer to keep the focus there. So that's an editorial note, and I felt it was important. And with that, here's my interview with the wonderful, hilarious Patty Nusser, recorded a couple of weeks ago in her home in Hastings-on-Hudson. Here you go. It's a little surreal, right? Because we had never met before until my family moved to Hastings, yep, 3.5 years ago.
Was it 3.5?
Yeah. Wow. It was summer 15.
Okay.
One of,
gosh,
our first ever Saturdays up here, we all ended up at Jonathan and Liz Benno's backyard.
Yep.
Our sons were basically clones of each other.
Oh, my God.
Short cropped hair, dark Under Armour,
yep,
clothes. They were,
yep,
shooting hoops together immediately.
That's right. They were shooting hoops.
And as we sit here talking, they're actually doing God knows what upstairs in your
house.
I
don't know.
Okay.
No.
I thought it was just a last second thought, but I have this story coming out about, mm-hmm, private chefs, which you're in, and I thought it'd be fun to sit down and...
I know, and we've never talked about it.
I don't even know where you're from.
Going back to that first day we met,
yeah,
you actually said to me, you said, you're a private chef. God, I've always wanted to talk to private chefs, and were interested from the moment
in that
I
in
met.
Particular.
Yeah.
Well,
and then we just never connected, and then
I think we've only had dinner out once, and it was a bigger group. It was,
yeah,
you know, some non-industry friends,
yeah,
right? My neighbors, the Macalusos, civilians. What do you call people who aren't in the industry? Do you have a word for it? I use civilians.
Just friends, I guess, because there's nobody in the industry.
Just friends.
I don't delineate.
Okay. So, because for me, it's always been this thing that's fascinated me, right? So like a,
yep,
million years ago, there's a chef in New York named Tom Valenti. He currently, mm-hmm, has a place called the Oxbow Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
He got famous in the late 80s at Allison,
oh,
on,
yeah,
Dominick Street. He
and
was
then West.
He had West.
I
he,
loved
and,
West.
He had Butterfield 81.
Yep.
And he's a really great chef,
yep,
great palate. But he had told me a million years ago that he had an early job as a private chef.
I think I remember that story.
And it's in one of our cookbooks.
Yeah.
But you may have just known it socially.
Yeah, I think it...
But the guy he worked for said to him, you can cook anything you want for me.
Yeah.
But I don't want to have the same dinner twice.
Right.
And Tom,
yep,
points to the 200 dinners he cooked for this,
yeah,
person as an amazing quantum leap.
So fun.
Because you don't get to cook like that until you're a chef.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to do what you want.
No.
If you're a sous chef, maybe you can put a special on the menu.
Right.
Right? But
and you're
more
cooking it like 5 or 6 times, 10 times every night.
Yeah, right.
Like you're not just making it once and moving on.
Right. So,
yeah,
that's always interested me. And then I feel like in the last several years, this is kind of the piece I just wrote, a lot of people are leaving. Some people who have been, like there's a guy named Danny Amond,
mm-hmm,
in Brooklyn. He was a chef at Franny's.
Okay.
He came up at, like,
right,
in the Thomas Keller Group. He was,
yep,
at the French Laundry. And like after After Franny's, he was the chef at another restaurant that those guys owned, and he eventually found his way to some other restaurant jobs, but in between, he spent some time private chefing.
Right.
And I feel like there's more and more people doing this now. Jonathan Wu, who had Fung Tzu Restaurant in New York, which I loved, has gone back to the clients he had before that restaurant.
Right.
And I just feel like from a lifestyle point of view, from a creativity point of view, from a financial point of view...
It's all those things.
Yeah.
And I feel like... people are working more. They're having less time to go out.
They're working more in restaurants.
No, people, the clients.
Oh, the clients.
Are working more,
right.
And they just want to come home and not think about going out, or they don't want to think about cooking, and they just want food to be in the refrigerator.
Right.
And why not just hire somebody to just do it?
Right. Yeah.
And, yeah, and then from a professional standpoint, from, like, the chef standpoint, it's just a better lifestyle. Like, that was my whole reason.
Yep. You made the change when you guys started having kids.
Yes, sort of.
Or that was the motivating factor.
Totally. Yeah.
You wanted to be able to spend time with your kids.
Yeah, I wanted to have kids. I wanted a family. I knew... See, I guess my whole story was kind of... If you start from the beginning, my whole story was like... I knew I started in the food world... older than most people.
Okay.
And so I always knew that I wanted kids. I wanted on a life outside of the restaurant industry. I didn't want to have a restaurant per se. So I knew that was eventually something I wanted to do, but I just didn't really know how to get there.
Right.
I didn't know where to go to get it.
So I don't know if you realize this, Patty, but I don't want to just talk about the I don't just like you for your private chef. I want the whole Patty Nusser story. Because honestly, it's so funny. Because we
I know,
do
we
see
talk
each other
about it.
Once in a while, like if one of us is dropping the kids
off. It's the drop-off.
We have the drop-off conversation, which is usually just a gripe session.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
Tell me, where are you from?
I'm from a small town upstate, High Falls, New York, Ulster County.
Okay.
And it's actually, we were talking earlier about Craig Claiborne. So High Falls, one of the few things that it's known for was Craig Claiborne came up to High Falls back in, I don't know what, a long time ago, and gave the Dupuy Canal House a 4-star review.
Yep.
So that's my hometown.
Okay.
And so... my siblings, I think my oldest sister worked there. I don't think my brother did.
At the Dupuy Canal House?
Dupuy Canal House, yep.
Can we just pause for one second?
Yeah.
Why don't you could probably do...
What?
It's actually in my book. But the Dupuy Canal House was... it was a restaurant that opened around the same time as Chez Panisse. And John Novy was the chef.
Yep.
And it was a 4-star New York Times review...
Yeah.
Outside of Manhattan, like not just outside Manhattan, like
an hour and a half,
it's up in the sticks.
Hours.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's my town.
Yeah. It's
There's
a beautiful nothing. Area.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So you grew up there.
That's where I grew up.
Okay. What did your family do?
So my dad, who's no longer around, my parents are both music majors.
Okay.
And so we do have, obviously music in our background. But my dad worked at IBM. My mom taught piano lessons and then got into real estate. Actually, she still has a real estate business in High Falls.
Okay.
And so, and I'm the youngest of four.
Oh,
so,
my gosh. What's the gender breakdown?
So, my oldest sister's 10 years older. My brother's 8 years older. My other sister's 4 years older, and then me.
Okay.
So, there's a big gap between me and my oldest.
Yeah.
I like to remind her of that, too.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, so I think for me... growing up, I just always, I was definitely the observer because being the youngest.
Okay.
Got to see the good and the bad and what I knew I didn't want to do. And I kind of knew I always loved to cook. I was in 4-H, upstate, you got to be in 4-H.
Uh-huh.
And learned how to cook there. And I went off to college, got my 4-year degree, got a job.
What did you study?
Ugh. This is where
Oh my gosh.
I start the culinary field so late in my life. So I was a computer science major.
What?
I know.
You?
I know.
Oh my God.
Computer science, I know. So,
no insult to the computer science industry, but
no,
like I gotta say,
this is such a bad time to be in that business.
How do for people who don't know Patty, Our mutual friend Joanna Prisco,
yep,
who lives in the same. There's a lot of food people in so this little town. For a town of 8,000,
oh, yeah. I know.
There's a lot of food. Jen Dirksen
connected,
is in this town.
Yeah.
Ivan Orkin is one village over.
Yeah. I don't even know Ivan, but
it's crazy.
I know.
But so you know, just recently, Joanna, I think on Fridays on her Instagram account, like mm-hmm. does these little profile photos of women she really
yes.
admires, and she did this piece on you, and you were described in these terms
out of the blue. I was like, "What?"
But the terms were like fierce. I don't think she actually used the word warrior, but that was like the vibe.
Now I'm starting to blush.
So no insult to the computer science profession, but
it's
you don't really fit.
Worst.
You don't fit the profile.
I never did.
Was it just pure pragmatism as you saw it?
I just knew I wanted to be a businesswoman. It was like Working Girl was the movie. It was my favorite movie. I was like, I wanted to be that person. I wanted to be on Wall Street or somewhere in New York with my briefcase earning money. And I lived up in the sticks. Like, I wanted to be in the big city.
Okay.
And so I got a job my senior year of college. It was like on-campus recruiting. And, you know, this is back in the day. So this is like 1990.
Okay.
There's no Windows. Like, it's not... now I'm going to give up my
what?
Secret past. I was programming in DOS. Like, it's not... Uh-huh. It wasn't pretty. I had,
people
like,
know
the
what
big
is
IBM PC on my desk. It was massive.
Yeah.
5 1/4 inch floppy disks.
Yeah.
Like, it just wasn't pretty.
Yeah.
And
this is
it's very
we
stressful.
All, this is how we
yeah,
all,
this is
I mean,
how
you and I are about
paper,
the same age.
Yeah, we wrote papers
but
in college.
But is DOS when you had to... I never did anything computing-wise after high school, but is that when you had to write, if-then?
Yes.
Like, you actually wrote programming like that?
Yes.
Yes.
And... Oh, God, it was just so... Ugh. Stressful. It was so stressful for me.
Yeah,
so I got this job, and it was, like, great job. I was making, I think, back then, it was a lot of money.
Was this in the city?
So my job was actually in, what was the name? Trumbull, Connecticut.
Okay.
So here I am, like, right out of college, living in Southport, Connecticut, got this great job in Trumbull at Cheesebro Ponds, USA, owned by the Lever Brothers, you know, Lever Brothers Company.
Yeah.
And I was on what they call the fast track. So I was, like, working in each department for 2 weeks at a time, just learning all about the company because I was in the information resources department and... God, this is so boring.
No, it's not. I'm just like sitting here
God, it was so boring.
Look, Elvis Costello was a computer programmer until he sold his first album. So there is precedent.
I'm not going to sell an album. But I just read a letter I wrote home to my parents. I was just at my mom's. And I read this letter. I was like, what the heck was I talking about? I'm like, oh, my God. I'd do like the overnight shift when... All the processing takes place in companies. It was overnight, and I was like in this cold, white lit room, freezing. I was like drinking hot cocoa, and my hours were, I think it was 8 or 7 p.m. to 8 a.m. Something like it was a long shift. So I was only doing like 3 or 4 days a week.
Yeah,
but it was just awful. Like getting home, eating dinner when everybody else is drinking coffee and eating breakfast. Like
oh
it was
my
just
God.
Anyway. So time goes by. I change companies. I then go to work for this. This is another boring story.
Okay, let's take an interlude.
Okay,
let's do a flashback. Let's pretend it's a
Quentin. It's making me sweat.
I know. Look at you.
It's horrible.
But look how it turned out. This is so great.
I know.
But here's what I want to
know.
Here's what I want to know. Let's pretend we're in a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Okay.
So we're gonna go out of chronology.
Okay.
Was there food in your life as a kid? Was there cooking in your life as a kid? Had you ever had a job that involved food preparation or waiting tables or working a counter as a kid?
Yeah, let's
Where's the germ of where you ended up?
Okay, so High Falls, New York, as you know, is probably a half an hour due west of CIA, Culinary Institute in Hyde Park, across the river. And so I remember this girl who was the same age as my brother, and I was probably, I don't know, six, so he was 14. Yeah, maybe a little old. Doesn't matter how old. Maybe a little older. And I remember this friend of his graduated from high school and just went straight to Culinary Institute.
Okay.
And then years ago, actually, her father was my trumpet teacher.
Okay.
He played the trumpet. So I remember we get this magazine in the mail. It's like the American Airlines, whatever.
Yeah.
And she's on the cover with like the white toque.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, look at this. She's the chef for American Airlines. Or she was a chef. I was like, wow. And I was just always so interested in it. But back then, so I graduated from high school in 86. Back then, you don't go straight to, well, we didn't go straight to culinary school. You have to go to college.
Right.
So, but in high school, I always had like a waitressing job. But really, one of my best jobs, you know, best and I mean worst, was working at the golf club, at the poolside snack bar. Oh my God. I just remember 4th of July, like so many people coming to eat, and I only had enough hamburgers thawed out to feed like 10 people.
And were you like a short order cook there? Like, did you cook?
I ran the snack bar. Yeah,
you did
so
it
I was
all.
Cooking. I ordered. I took the money. Like, it was so unsanitary.
Was just you?
Just me.
Oh my God.
I would go to like the, you know, the big warehouse where you could get candy by, you know, there was no Costco back then. You know, stock up the candy in the shelves. And I remember I had frozen hamburgers, and I had like a chest freezer. And I was like, oh my God. And there's no microwave. How am I going to thaw out the burgers? Like, everybody's waiting in line for hamburgers.
Yeah.
It's 4th of July. Like, yeah. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And so I earned, it was like my summer before my freshman year of college. I made like $2,500. I was psyched. I was like, oh my God, this is great.
Were you good at it though?
Yeah.
Like, did you have that natural ability to like multitask?
Yeah.
You knew what was going on in front of you, behind you, to your left.
I definitely learned how to do it better.
You had an innate sense of timing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like hamburgers and hot dogs.
But that stuff does translate, no?
And and I learned a lot about pricing, which is so. I'll never forget this. This one guy I had like, you know, drawn out on a piece of paper. Hamburger $1.50 or whatever it was, and the super burger, and I had the list of ingredients. It was like lettuce, tomato, cheese, and I think that was it. Super burger was like $2, and the guy looked at me. He's like, "Well, what if I want just lettuce? Is it still $2?" And I was like, "Yes, it is." And she was so pissed. So it was very basic, but it was, you know, good learning experience.
Yeah.
And I made my own. I felt so good because I was like procuring the stuff. I remember having to go out. I made like homemade banana bread. And I remember going to the grocery store and the guy was like, "Oh, I have so many brown bananas for you." And I was just like, you know, I had so many different people and it was a lot of driving.
Yeah.
But it was a great job.
Okay.
And I loved it.
You loved it.
And then college, you know, I would have the summer job waitressing up in, I was at University of Vermont, and I just decided to stay up there in the summers and working at boat clubs up there, waitressing, because that was where you'd earn the big bucks, and that's kind of what you want to do when you're in college.
Yeah.
And
did you like being around restaurants?
I loved it.
You did?
Like, yeah, I always loved it, and I just never thought of it as my career.
So do you think if you were born like 15 years later, you might have just gone straight to that? When it was a little more, no pun intended, but when it was a little more palatable for like somebody from, you know, quote unquote, a nice family, like when the profession didn't have the like, you know, grungy
reputation. Maybe it was just the way I was brought up that it just wasn't a highly thought of career choice.
It was like menial labor.
Yeah, but then you have, but then
that's how it was seen.
I know, but then you have a place like Dupuy Canal House, which is like, oh my gosh, John Novy, you know, good friend of my mom's, like, oh my gosh.
Well, this was like, a guy who did like, right, he spent time in Europe and came back
so
Italy.
Why
he wasn't a Francophile. He'd spent time in Italy.
Yeah.
But he...
He's a total hippie.
But he was a hippie who was doing like 5-6 course tasting menus there. Yeah.
Yeah. And his trademark, or whatever you want to call it, was like putting popcorn on salad.
People still talk about
that. I know.
That.
I was like, oh my God, he was so cutting edge. So, but why, but I keep thinking about it. I'm like, well, why wasn't it a career choice for me? I just don't know.
Did you cook at home back in those days?
Oh, yeah.
Were you good?
Yeah, I think so. I think I was.
Did you cook out of cookbooks or did you cook intuitively?
It was Gourmet Magazine.
Okay.
I loved reading Gourmet, and actually that was in... going to do the time travel. That was kind of my inspiration for why I changed gears. So jumping ahead after my career. So I always had these gourmet magazines. And yeah. It was always my inspiration. Like, I always made stuff. Like, I remember making the hot apricot souffle.
Uh-huh.
I still remember it. And I remember making, it was a big project. It was like a seafood terrine.
Okay, really?
And it was like a salmon. It was three colors. And it was like green was pureed scallops and peas. And then white was just plain scallops, and then pink was out with salmon or something.
Yeah.
And it was like egg yolks, whipped egg yolks. Like, it definitely pushed me beyond what I would normally do.
Yeah.
Like, I was just making chocolate chip cookies. Like, that's what I was.
When you start getting more ambitious like that,
mm-hmm.
did you have a natural aptitude for it? Like if you were doing something that
so
evolved.
Long ago. I think so.
Like,
I wasn't really tuned into it back then, but I guess you're right. I guess, yeah, like timing.
I'm asking. I don't know if I'm right.
I'm just thinking. Did I have an aptitude? Yeah, you're right. That was a question.
I just meant like when you would, you know, you have a book in front of you.
You're reading the
recipe. There's no step-by-step photos on how to do it.
Yeah, definitely no photos.
Did you feel kind of like you knew your way around?
I think so.
A cutting board
maybe.
And a...
Yeah. Yeah, I felt comfortable.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was definitely at ease. But again, I just didn't think of it as
right.
my career.
Yeah.
I just loved it.
Yeah. So
I loved it.
What was the turning point?
Oh, so jump ahead to 95. And I remember it was like January. I was just talking to my sister about this. I was so stressed out with my job. I had like a dedicated phone line in my bedroom to download databases because they would take all night to download these stupid databases. I was working for this other company at this point. And I got this rash on the side of my body. And I was like, oh God, it itches so much. And a friend of mine was like, you gotta go to the doctor for that. So I went to the doctor, and to this day, I'm like, I need to reach out to this man and thank him, because he was like, he looked at me and he said, you have the shingles. He's like, you're 25. You are too young to have shingles. You need to reevaluate what you're doing.
So shingles is, you had had chicken pox as a child?
Yep.
Okay, so shingles is when you've had chicken pox.
It's like this dormant,
on
your spine.
On your spine? That's news to me.
Yeah, and I think it's on your spine. I could be wrong. Because I think that's why it's only one side of your
that's interesting.
Body.
So they say the virus, it never quite, I don't know if this is for everybody, but mm-hmm. shingles is, it never quite leaves your body.
Nope.
And usually it's activated by stress.
Correct.
So later in life, if you're in a period of extreme stress,
mm-hmm.
you can get, I don't even think contract is the right word. You can come down with or whatever it is. You get shingles.
And it's very painful.
It can be painful. It's sometimes it involves like facial paralysis.
Yeah. I've heard.
But to your point,
stories.
On one side of your face.
It was on my side. Yeah. On my
Yeah,
body.
But rash, painful rash.
Painful. And I thought it was laundry detergent. Like, it's so stupid. And so the doctor was like, no, you got to reevaluate. And so I was like, what? I was like, oh my God.
He meant reevaluate your life?
My life.
Because
like what I'm doing.
He was like, you must...
This is too much stress for
you. Yeah.
And so I went out...
So you end up becoming a cook.
I know. That's what everybody says. Yeah, but it was the love was missing.
Yes.
Like, I really hated what I was doing.
Right.
Oh, God, I hated it so much. And...
So he says that to you.
And I was making such good money at this point. Like, not just about talk about money, but here I am, 25. I was making like $100,000.
Oh, my gosh.
I had a 401k, I had retirement, like, yeah, and full health insurance. Like, it was a good job.
Yeah.
And I was like...
With more good coming.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just can't. So I went out with a good family friend. He became a really good family friend. And he took me out to dinner. He was older. And Michael Hotop, shout out to Michael Hotop. And... He just looked at me. He's like, well, if you had a blank check in front of you, what would you do with it? And I was like, I'd go to the Culinary Institute. And he's like, I'm giving you 6 months. Just do it. You can do this. And I was like, oh, okay. So
what does that mean, I'm giving you 6 months?
He's like, I have this agreement with you that he's just like, you have to quit your job. Like, he's just telling me what to do. He's like, don't waste your time. Don't waste your time with what you're doing. And it wasn't a financial thing. It was just like...
Like he was giving you his blessing.
What you're telling me right now is something that you need to act on. And so I got the, you know, this is pre, you know, internet. I called them up. I got the application mailed to me. I filled out the application. I might have said a few white lies on it because I was like, oh my God.
What kind of white lies?
Like,
did you make up restaurant experience?
Oh, totally. And
because I don't know if it's still this way. You used to need like 2 years of experience.
You need like 2 or 3 years. Yeah. I definitely did not have that.
Yeah.
But I knew I could do it. Yeah. And I had other experience. And so I put down the date that I wanted to start there, kind of to get my ducks in a row and quit my job and make sure I'm okay financially. And they like called me or mailed me something. Or no, it was I applied for the baking program because I thought I wanted to be a baker.
Interesting.
And they didn't have any slots open until like a year or something. Like the baking program is back when I was there. They didn't have as many recurring open slots.
Right.
And they called me up and they said, well, we don't have a baking school, whatever it was called, program available right away, but you can go in the culinary department, the culinary program right away. I was like, oh. And they're like, there's baking as part of the program. I was like, oh, I'll get more bang for my buck. So I just did it. And my whole family thought I was crazy, even though they deny it, but they did think I was crazy.
Yeah.
Quit my job, cashed in my 401k. Oh, God. I went to CIA.
Did you live on campus?
I did. Well, wow. At first I lived off campus, and then I was broken into, and the police looked at me in the middle of the night, and they said, why are you living here? And I said, I've lived in Manhattan. I can live here. And he said, move out of here. So I was like, okay. So that's why I moved on campus. And
was that weird?
It was weird. But you know what I did?
People who have gone to the CIA a little older than the regular population.
Yeah, I had a roommate.
They find it really weird.
Well, you know, I was just like, whatever. Because I'm just there and I'm just kind of living in the moment. But what I did do is I wanted to save money and I wanted my own room. So I became an RA.
Okay, after, resident assistant.
Yep, after my externship.
Okay.
And so... I was just like, I didn't care that I had to like be on call on a weekend. Like, what am I going to do? Yeah. Whatever.
And you get a free room.
Free room, and it's a solo room.
Yeah.
So, finished that. I did my externship at the Food Network because they were brand new.
Oh, my God.
So that was summer of...
93?
96 is when I was there.
Okay.
And they were still on... 6th Avenue and 45th Street, somewhere around
there. Yeah, like yeah, right near the Fox Building.
Yeah, right near, like on the 18th
floor. Radio City.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I went there the summer.
What were you doing there?
I was in the test kitchen. And it was like, it was so fun. And I was like, that's what I want to do. And I went there, actually, I went and worked there right after I graduated because they're like, yeah, we have a spot open. And then I went there, I was like, oh. I was still a little antsy. And so I did another thing that my family thought I was really crazy. I sold my car for $5,000.
What kind of car did you have that you sold it used for $5,000?
Right? Some sucker. It was a...
Really?
Honda, some sucker bought it for... Honda, four-door Honda, what was it?
Oh my God.
What was the four-door Honda?
I wouldn't know. An Accord?
No,
I don't know.
The Accord. What was my car? I'll think of it. So it was my little Honda.
In 1996, you sold a used Honda for $5,000.
Cash, baby, up in Poughkeepsie. I know.
Yeah, well, you couldn't do it anywhere where they could see you again.
I know. Oh, my God. It was like, and my family was like, what are you doing? My sister was like, you keep divesting yourself.
Is Patty Nusser your real name?
I know, right? No. Keep divesting yourself. So I divested more, and I was like, I'm going to Italy. And right at that moment is when I, at the Food Network, I was working on Mario's show.
Molto Mario.
Yep.
Okay.
It's Molto Mario. He hadn't opened Babbo yet, and I kind of whispered to him on the set. I said, hey, so... He really liked the way I cooked, and because I thought I was like burning shit and just overcooking stuff. And because on you have to be really specific when you're working for TV. And he just looked at me, he's like, this is how I want it. You tell everyone this is how I want. I'm like, I'm like the low man on the totem pole. Right. I'm not going to tell people.
Yeah.
And so I whispered to him at one point, I just said, listen, I'm going to go to Italy, but they don't know it yet here. Do you know a restaurant over there? Because I was going to like a cooking school, like a 2-month cooking program there, and then they'd send you out to a job.
Why Italy?
I don't know. Because I wanted to go there. I wanted to live there.
What's your family's back? I don't know what your maiden name is.
It's Collins.
Collins.
That's a good
okay.
one.
That
I gave
makes,
that up.
Okay.
Gave so, up Collins. I know. When we little side story,
Patricia
we,
Collins. Wow.
When we first
this changes
got,
my I whole know. Understanding
when
of
we
you.
When we first got married, when Andy and I first got married, I went to go. I was so excited to go, you know, get our joint checking account.
Yeah.
And I was like, hi, I'm gonna. We, can you merge our accounts? And I just got married. And she's like, okay. And she's like, what's your name? I said, well, maiden name is Collins, and my married name is Nusser. And she just looked at me with this deadpan. She's like, not for nothing, but you went from Collins to Nusser. I was like, I know. I gave it up.
I got to tell you, first of all, I'm hyper aware of this because I mentioned it on air a few weeks ago. Somebody wrote, and I appreciated it, which I also said on air. But somebody wrote a review of the show on iTunes and said that, you know, I talk too much. I talk about myself too much.
I know. So I feel like I'm talking too much.
No, you're not. But okay. I'm sensitive to even bringing this up, but I think it's relevant because a lot of listeners know Caitlin, mm-hmm. my wife, who does the intros with me a
lot. Adorable Caitlin.
So you and Caitlin missed each other at the Food Network.
She was at the Food Network?
By about 6 months.
Shut
she
the front door.
She worked on... see, you made my point. Before we started, you said, can I swear? And there was your opportunity,
right.
And you blew it.
Hold on. Where did she work? We must know.
She was a
we
producer.
We must have common people.
Okay, well, first of all, Rochelle Brown introduced us. She was a producer at the network. Caitlin worked on Food News and Views, which was the nightly news program hosted by David Rosengarten, a food writer. And at the time, the first lady of the city of New York, this poor woman was married to Rudy Giuliani.
I was just going to say,
Donna
I was
Hanover.
There when they were going through a very, probably right before they got divorced.
Yeah,
she going in the bathroom and crying all the time.
Yeah, so we all heard all those stories.
How come we've never talked about this?
Well, Caitlin, it was a long time ago,
I
Patricia
know.
Collins. But Caitlin, when I met her, her name is now Caitlin Friedman.
Yeah.
Her name was Caitlin Connolly.
Caitlin Connolly.
Now, I guess I can say this because she doesn't talk about it much, but it's not like it's a huge secret.
Say it.
She had been married before, so Connolly was her married name. So when we got married,
gosh.
I said, listen, I'm not asking you to change it to Friedman.
But rid of Connolly.
Can you go back to your maiden name?
Something.
She's like, I don't want to do that.
Oh, she's
and I
like
said,
so stuck in limbo.
And I said, why don't you change one letter and be Caitlin Connolly?
Ah!
And I was serious, actually.
Did she do it?
No, she's Caitlin Friedman.
I know.
She took my name.
Okay,
but not because I want... I didn't...
Get rid of that Connolly.
I didn't want her to take my name. I never had it. I didn't want that.
Oh, my God. She worked at Food Network.
Yeah, you guys just missed each other.
So I was there. Yeah. I was there summer
Can we embarrass our children?
Yeah. Let's embarrass...
Hi, Declan.
Hi, Deck.
My son Declan is coming through.
Oh, there he is. There's my spawn.
There's Will Nusser.
I don't want to say what I normally do. Should I say what I normally say?
What, like stay out of trouble?
No. I'm like, just remember, you came out of my vagina.
Oh, my God. Do I have to edit that out?
Yes. No.
I do?
No, you don't.
I don't?
No, leave it.
Is that how you say it?
That's
how
what
you,
I always remind.
Really?
I have to remind them.
I'm
going to
start saying
from.
That to Declan.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
so
anyway.
I really don't. I want to be clear. I really don't have to edit that out?
No.
Okay.
No.
So.
Yeah, no. I was just stuck in the kitchen.
Okay.
Like, I didn't.
Yeah.
I got to know the chefs on the set. Like, who else did I work
Michael
with?
Michael LaMonaco was there at the time.
I never worked with Michael. I worked with Sarah Moulton.
Love.
I know. I worked with, what's their names? The two women.
Mary Sue and Susan?
Yep.
Okay.
Worked on their show.
Yeah. The Two Hot Tamales.
Two Hot Tamales. That was so long ago. David Rosengarten on occasion.
Yeah.
I forget what he was. What was the song?
He had a show called Taste.
Taste, that's what it was.
Yeah, where he'd pick like an ingredient and tell its whole history, and it was kind of ahead of its time.
Oh, it was such a pain in the ass to do.
But that could be like a Netflix show now, it could be with the production values of Netflix. Like, yeah, that's it was just true. It was very low budget.
The whole thing.
But he was David was super knowledgeable,
you're right.
and
he really
it was
took
smart.
A deep dive. Yeah, into each. Yeah. But the Sarah Moulton show was and Nick Malgieri was part of it.
Yeah,
it was that live. What was it? It was a live cooking show.
Sarah had a live show.
It was really hard because I remember doing this one for Nick Malgieri, and he was, it's baking.
Yes,
he came on for special baking shows.
And yeah.
I remember I was doing this simple syrup, and it was a very, he had... Cooking shows are all about the timing and each phase, and you have to have each phase done, the swap-outs and the beauties. And Nick had this simple syrup. I forget what we were doing, but I remember he was just... Oh, God, he ripped me one because I was like 5 degrees off on this syrup, and I was just like, oh my God, no one's gonna see it on the camera, let's just do it. Come on. So that was really stressful, and I was like still the low man on the totem pole, but they liked what I do. Like, I remember, did you know Susan Stockton?
No.
So she was like, I guess you'd call her the executive chef at the time, but she stayed on, she doesn't work there anymore. She asked me to like go out and help cater. What was her name? Can't remember. One of the higher ups at the Food Network, her brownstone in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I was so honored. Like, I was like, oh my God, little me doing this event for these, big wigs at the Food Network. And I did. I liked them. I liked the work, but I knew it wasn't really my heart and soul.
Yeah.
I always say, I'm like, I want to be in food media. I always said it, but every time I dipped my toe into it, I was like, it's just not...
It wasn't the right fit.
It wasn't the right fit.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I did it because it just opened my eyes to, I could do a cooking show.
Like, right.
I know how to do it. I can write a recipe. I know how to do it.
Yeah.
So I went to Italy, and I did this little culinary program with various people. And actually, I'm still in touch with two of the women I met. And I didn't know a word of Italian. And my friend, it was Amy and Lisa were my friends. And it was actually my 30th birthday.
Okay.
I was like, I'm doing this for myself. It was the day I left for Italy. It was my 30th birthday. And Amy sitting next to me on this airplane. And it was through, San Domenico. Who's the owner of San Domenico?
Here in the States.
In the city.
It's Tony...
May.
Tony May.
Tony May.
Okay, we got there.
So the dinner was at San Domenico, which is now not...
That space? That's where Maria lives.
Thank you, Maria. Yeah. So San Domenico, we had this dinner, and I remember my friend, this new friend of mine, she's like, you don't know any Italian? I said, I don't know a word. And she's like, okay, you ready? Hello? And goodbye. It's ciao. It's the same word. I said, okay, ciao. I can do it. And so I just went over there, and I'm like, God, that was so ballsy. And I'm 30 years old, and I'm just like cold turkey going over there. Yeah. And it was so amazing. I was like, was there almost a year working in this restaurant. The chef was crazy. I still to this day think I need to go back there and just see what they're doing. I think the Babbo at the time, the dad, was... I don't think he's alive anymore, but he was definitely older. Hysterical. They were all just funny, goofy Italians, but I just learned... They would take me out on the road trips to go... It was an Enoteca, so I had this huge wine collection in this, It was a high-end restaurant.
Yeah.
And we only did, like, maybe 30 covers a night. Maybe. And it was... A lot of work.
Yeah.
But, we're just kind of like, oh my God, they think this is a lot? Like, 30 is nothing.
Right.
But, and so many stories about Italy, but it was like, I wouldn't trade it for anything. It was just so great. Like, the smells and the woman would just show up with these racks of fresh porcini, and then the chef just couldn't cook them fast enough, then they'd get all wormy, and he would be like, shh, and you'd like throw them away. I was like, oh my God. Like, it was just, there was such bounty of such incredible stuff over there.
Yeah.
And we got to travel. We only had one day off, so I got to see, we'd usually like, so then my friend Lisa, who I met, her restaurant in Perugia was horrible. She was getting like flour thrown at her. She was getting totally abused. I remember going, talking to her on the payphone, because there were no cell phones back then. In Italy there were, but I remember talking to her, and she's like, I am miserable. I said, you know what? Kyo, the Japanese guy, he's leaving soon, so why don't you come take his place? She's like, okay. And I don't even know how that shit happened, because...
You mean how you pulled off that transaction?
Yeah, because... Yeah.
Because who were like, you?
Well, who am I? But yeah. Also, like, how did I even communicate right. with her? Like, and how did she even get there? Like,
right.
There was just...
You don't remember
there was
that
no
piece.
Communication.
Yeah. That's Italy. It's magical.
I know. And we didn't... It really...
Who can say why it happened?
It just happened.
Yeah.
And so she became a roommate, and we... Oh, my God, we had so much fun. She's actually a private chef right now.
Aha! Uh-huh.
She's from California. She worked at Chez Panisse. We just had so many great late-night conversations together. We slept in the same bed. We just had such a great time. And our friend Amy was in southern Italy, and so we would... One of our... You know, we I think at one point we had 2 days off. So we traveled by train down to, I forget where it was, on the coast, somewhere near Sorrento. Uh-huh. And her restaurant was just like overlooking the ocean. And
oh,
we just
man.
Sat there and, yeah, we were just students.
Like a dream.
You know, it was dreamy. Oh, my God. It was so great. And we just, yeah, excuse no me. Strings attached.
Okay. Sorry. So here's a question. You... We're doing this computer programming thing.
Yeah. Oh God, taking me back again.
You're,
okay.
No. Just for that okay. second. But then your original direction was for yourself was you wanted to go into the baking program.
Yes.
Which is very. That makes sense for someone who is a computer programmer, right? Because
yeah,
baking.
It's very instructional.
It's very specific.
Yes.
It's very. It's not.
There's no wing in it.
You don't improvise
uh-uh.
in baking. Okay. What could be more different than going to Italy, right? Where the in
I
terms
know.
Of the cooking style,
right?
Not that it's haphazard or random
no,
or anything,
it
but it
so,
is a whole different mindset.
It's so fly by the seat of your pants.
Yeah. So my question is, have you ever thought about this? Because that seems like a huge change
yep.
that you put yourself in position for.
Mm-hmm.
Was it conscious?
You know what? I felt like it's kind of how I felt when I was in high school. I was just like, get me out of here. I was in this small town. Get me out of High Falls. Oh, I can't wait to go to college. And I was just like, oh, just want to get away.
Yeah.
And I kind of had that same feeling. I was like, oh, I just need to get away. And just I just needed to spread my wings further and... I guess at that point I had nothing tie me down. So
right.
I was like, why not? I don't really remember why I was doing it. I was just like, I knew I had to do it. I had
yeah.
that
but
burning desire. I really wanted to live in Europe. I just needed to do it. I
yeah.
needed to experience. I wanted to just like go all balls to the wall. I wanted to... It was less intimidating for me to go to Italy than work in a high-end restaurant in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? Like, I just felt so self-conscious, like, oh, God, I've just worked at the Food Network and restaurants in Burlington, Vermont. I was, like, so intimidated by going to Manhattan, and
yeah.
I just... I
that
knew,
doesn't seem weird to me, though.
Okay, so I figured if I just went to Italy that it would cross it all out. And I'm like, if I work in Italy, I could go anywhere. I could go anywhere and just... I wanted the confidence.
But do
I
you,
definitely didn't have the confidence at that point.
But when you got there, and maybe this is just, I'm sure people have this feeling of, you know, about different places,
mm-hmm.
right? But Italy to me, I've never gone to Italy. And I went there as a recently out of college
mm-hmm.
kid with a backpack and a Eurail pass and traveler's
so
checks.
Fun.
I did that thing.
Yeah, so
I've,
fun.
I've been there. I got engaged in Italy. Caitlin and
oh,
I got engaged in Italy.
Did not know that.
So I was there as a food-savvy adult.
Yep.
And I was there with a chef that on a cookbook we were working on together
oh,
where
nice.
We got treated amazingly, right?
Yeah.
But in each of those parts of my life, right,
mm-hmm.
I have a very romantic view of Italy.
Yeah.
But it's not fantasy. It's based in actually my experience there.
Right?
I feel like positive stereotypes are okay.
Yeah.
I love Italians. I love them. They're so warm. They're so forgiving. They're so
patient.
And
they're so open.
Open. They want to share.
Yeah, but they're also, well, see, I had, looking back at it, I'm like, oh my God, that was like abuse. Like, I remember, I agree with everything you just said. I also believe that they just step into your own shit. They're a little too close sometimes. So, what do I mean by that? Well. So, at this restaurant I was working in, on my, the 3-hour siesta in between lunch and, or 2 hours, I don't remember how long it was, 2 hours? It wasn't long. Siesta in between.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize this. In those small towns in Italy.
Yeah, you, and everything shuts down.
They shut down. It's the way most people think of Spain.
And,
but yeah.
Yeah, you shut down, and it's not two different sets of people working lunch and dinner. It's like the same people working lunch and the same people working dinner.
Yeah.
And so it's very long days. And so I had my siesta, and I was like, I got to go out for a run. I got to go for a run. I got to exercise. And I remember going for a run. I remember the mama and Francesco was the son. He was the chef. So they had two sons. One was Francesco, and one was Luca. See, in this part of Tuscany where I was working, they don't pronounce the C's. So it was Luca, but it was Luca. And I was out for a run, and they're like, oh, Patrizia, how am I doing? Like, I can't remember what they said, but it was basically like pointing out my inner thighs were covered in bruises.
Oh.
Because the mama, every time she'd come in or when Francesco would come in the kitchen, he would like pinch my inner thighs as like a funny thing, and it hurt. Like, it was so painful, and I would say, stop it. And he thought I was flirting with him. And I was getting so angry, and he loved it. And I was like, oh my God, you suck. I was so mad. So it finally took me going out for a run and them seeing it. They're like, oh, mio Dio. And it was just like, oh my God. I was like, yeah, see, this is what you're doing to me.
Oh, it was the actual guy.
Yeah, he was in the passenger side, or he was driving his mother somewhere. I was
like, what a dick.
So I came back, and so that took care of that.
I should be laughing.
But no, yeah. I know, but looking back, I'm like, God, that was just wrong. Or like, I'm trying to think of other things. You know, he would, oh, they were just like sitting at dinner. You know, we'd have, the family meal was, I got to say, some of the best food I've ever eaten. Like just, oh my God, we just ate so well. It was like the first time I had like the real panzanella. Like the panzanella I have here, or that I actually make at home, like the babbo panzanella, is delicious. But this was like totally different.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, the bread in Tuscany had no salt. So it was like this stale, unsalted bread. And they would soak it. So it was like very granular.
In water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And drain it. And then it was just like with this vinegar and oil. And I can't remember the vegetables they put. I think they put peas or something. For some reason, peas sticks in my head. I don't know why. Probably wasn't peas. But it was just so delicious.
Yeah.
And I don't think I could replicate it.
Yeah.
But it was so good. And like just plates of salami and whole fish. And this was family meal.
Right.
Like it was just so delicious. But I remember sitting there at family meal and they had this dog, Recky. And I remember my friend Lisa was sitting there and she's like feeding the dog some food. And they're like, no. And she's like, oh God. And we'd always talk in English, which is so funny because we'd say really bad things and they would have no idea what we were saying. And she started throwing the dog like a stick. And they're like, stop it. You stop that. Stop, you know, yelling at her in Italian. Stop throwing him the stick. And she looked at him. She's like, you're such assholes. You guys throw him rocks to fetch. Like, seriously, they were throwing rocks to this dog. Like, they were just so weird. They told us that carbonated water will make our butts bigger. They told us, like, they were just so weird. But, you know. We were definitely wrapped up in their family. Like, we went to Nona's house multiple times for Sunday afternoon, all-day lunch, which was delicious.
Yeah.
But it was just like, oh, I just don't want to sit here with them anymore. Oh, my God. I just want to go sit on the beach.
Right.
So, but I'm so glad I did it.
Yeah.
I would never do anything different.
So, what comes after that?
So, before I left for Italy, I had whispered into Mario's ear, and at this point, Babbo had not opened.
Yeah.
And he said, he's like, all right, listen, I'm opening up a restaurant. Call me when you get home. Just call me. Whenever it is, just call me. I'm like, really? Okay. And, you know, a lot, this was, I don't remember when it was. So I got back in, I think, August of September. And maybe it was October. No, I got back in October because it was right when Babbo got reviewed. And I came home and I looked in the newspaper. I was like, oh, shit. I missed it. I missed my opportunity because I hadn't called him yet. And Babbo got the 3-star review. And
who was the critic then? Do you remember?
I think it was Ruth.
It was Ruth.
Was it Ruth?
That makes sense.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, damn it. All right, I'm just going to do it. So I called Mario, I think he was in, he still had Poe at the time. And so I said, hey, can I come in? He's like, yeah, I'd love to. I'm so glad you called. Come on in. So I go to Babbo. I'm so nervous. And I'm sitting there in the dining room, and I see this man who now is my husband, but he's like pacing back and forth. And we talk about it now. He's like, I hated you. Because I was the girl from the Food Network.
Uh-huh.
And
who had imposed on him.
Right. And Mario hired me without conferring
right.
with Andy.
Right.
Because Andy was the executive chef at the time. And so when I jumped in, so Babbo was still on the 6-day work week. And so when I jumped in, I was hired as the tournant. And
which is like a floater.
I'm the floater, yeah. But oh my God.
You can work
God.
Any position, you cover for
I
people.
I was working pasta Monday, yeah. Tuesday, I was working sauté on Monday, pasta Tuesday, Wednesday, yeah. Grill bitch on Thursday, Friday.
You cover people's days off,
yep.
Sick days.
Cover the
fill
days.
Fill in if somebody's...
It was just basically, there was no sick days back then.
Well, I
covered
mean,
their days off yeah. and their shift to give people 2 days off,
yeah.
which was awesome. But it was really... really hard.
Yeah.
Like, I basically had to learn the whole menu, except yeah. for Garmage, because I didn't work Garmage, but it was that pasta station. Oh, my God. It was just so hard.
Well, I think even back then, they had a pasta tasting menu.
They had a pasta tasting menu.
In addition to the a la carte.
And in the regular tasting menu, there was a pasta course. Yeah. There was a la carte. You could order pasta split. You could order pasta three-way. That was always the joke in the kitchen. Three-way pasta. It was just like everybody wanted pasta because that's kind of what put Babbo on the map.
Yeah. At the time, it was some yeah. of the... It was definitely... How do I put it? It stood out. It had a lot of personality.
Yep.
There were definitely dishes you hadn't seen before.
Oh, yeah.
And yep. I think it kind of like bridged the time between... you know, like the real authentic, you know, super faithfully authentic Italian yeah. restaurants, like the Da Silvano's
exactly.
and the Il Molino's
yep.
and all these old school joints and
yep.
the San Domenico's.
San Domenico, yeah.
And the, like, Andrew Carmelini, Michael White
yep.
era, right? Like,
yep.
Mario
yeah.
kind of bridged those
he
people.
He totally bridged it.
Yeah.
And he made it current. Like, he made, you know, it wasn't red sauce. It was, you know... porcini mustard or
yeah.
I'm trying to think like I don't even remember
no, but some of those
with, yeah there's like I can still remember the menu
no but the pasta yeah. was like the mint love letters
yeah the mint love letters
the orchietti was the crazy
calves
good
calves brains yeah like
bucatini al
montrachana like nobody had bucatini
no one
nope
and I remember
and guitarra nobody had guitarra
and I remember once him saying to me this is how much things have changed.
Yeah.
I loved a Montrachana.
Yeah.
And he said, well, you need guanciale, and if you need it, call the restaurant and we'll give you some.
Right.
Right? Because
you couldn't get it.
Now
right.
you could just hop on Amazon.
I know.
Right, or whatever.
I know.
But that was the time.
Yep.
Yeah, but those dishes were new to people.
I know, and I remember, I still talk about this with Andy, I remember Faith Willinger...
Who does a lot of writing about Italian,
yes.
not Italian food here, but
in Italy.
Yeah.
And she would, whenever she would come to the States, it was like she had to bring the fennel pollen with her because she was the fennel pollen source.
Yeah.
Couldn't find it anywhere.
Yeah.
So she'd come in the kitchen, hey, and she'd deliver the fennel. And we had
yes.
to use it very sparingly, and it was very special. So, yeah, it was really fun. Yeah, I was just saying I was listening to Dave DeBerry's podcast, and I was like, oh gosh, yeah, it was so fun.
You mean the interview he and I did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we were,
he was
like, oh,
right.
Yeah. So we were, yeah, we were definitely alum. Had some crossover, and it was just back then, it was just, God, it was so hard. It was so hard, and it was so fun. And Andy and I were definitely the two old farts. Like at that point, I was, you know, 31. And all these other people were a lot younger than me. And I was like, oh, my God. And so, I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be one of the guys. And
that's how it felt still at the time.
Yeah. I wanted to be. And there were, I was not the only woman, but I wanted to be, I wanted to be part of the group.
But what does one of the guys mean? You had to swear. You had to tell foul jokes. You had
to
drink.
Well, that's kind
of
me.
You had to be able to. You had to be able to like put away a couple of pints
you
after work.
You're a very close knit group. You're in this tiny kitchen, and you're with each other the majority of your life.
Yeah.
And so you want to get along with them, and you get to know them, and so it's like when I say being part of the being one of the guys, it's like you want to be able to hang with them.
Yes.
And so that includes after hours, and we'd all every night you'd want to you gotta blow off steam. And so we went to like the Stone Crow, which was like
right
behind Babbo.
Yeah.
And we would just hang out. And
that was like what? How would you describe that? I always think of that place as like a pub, like a British in feeling.
Maybe.
It was just a bar.
We'd just sit at a bar. It was a bar. I think they had pool tables in the back.
In the back, it was like garden. It was garden level, I think. Like you took a few steps down from the sidewalk.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But that was right around the corner. Yeah, I think it may still be there.
I don't even know. But we spent many late nights there. And it was always me and Andy just kind of lingering at the end. And we were the two oldest people, like I said. And we were just kind of drawn to each other. But there was never anything, you know... Nothing ever happened until, like, this one night. Well, he got shingles because it was like he had a rough spot in his life. So we were walking home. I always kind of walked him home, and then I was living in Queens by myself. And
she would subway back to Queens?
Either subway or cab late night. And so I was like, I didn't even care how much it cost. I was like, I'm just going to take a cab. And sometimes I would share with another guy who lived around the corner from me. But walking home with Andy and... Or walking up, like, Washington Square Park, he lifted up his shirt, and I was like, dude, that is totally the shing. Like, I know that. And so he took a little, you know, he went to California to visit his mom. You know, he was going through a breakup, and he's trying to figure out his life. And, you know, time goes by, and then we just kind of realize, like, we're just really attracted to each other. And anyway, then the rest is history. But,
yeah. When did you guys get married?
October 2001.
Okay.
So, in fact, we had a few people from the restaurant, obviously, because, you know, we're friends with everybody, and it was in the backyard where I grew up. It was beautiful, and it was the month after September 11th, so it was like people were ready to kind of start doing things. It was just like such a horrible time in New York.
Yeah.
And, in fact, my brother, we went to Spain for a honeymoon, and my brother was like, you can't go to Spain. I said, well, why not? He's like, because you have to get on an airplane. I was like, it's probably the best time to get on an airplane. Like, what's going to happen?
It's high alert.
Yeah. And so,
people who are too young to remember, like, if you got on an airplane right after that, but you as a passenger, I remember this, you were actually ready to, like, jump somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you were on... It was like a plane full of you of air marshals.
Well, also, we only had, like, 5 people on the entire airplane.
For real?
Going to Spain.
Because people were so freaked.
Freaked. Nobody was traveling.
Yeah.
But we were. It was our honeymoon. But at our wedding, when we got married, people were like, oh, my God, they're kissing. Like, people had never seen us kiss.
Right.
They were freaked out, like, ew. And I'm like, well... Because it was like, you know, we're all a family. It was like, ew. But it was a really fun time. I'm so glad I did it. I knew I didn't want to be in the restaurants my whole life.
Yeah.
But then I got a little lost. I was like, what am I going to do? And I worked for a caterer, which I'm so glad I did. And he was great. And then I got pregnant. And then I was like, oh. And then it was like right around, so my oldest son... My oldest child, I should say. He was born the end of December, which is for catering is like the busy season.
Right.
So here I am, like my ankles are swollen. I'm doing it. I'm doing it, man. I can do this. And then...
So wait, you were working as...
I was working.
You were cooking?
For a caterer. Yeah, I was the
like
chef.
At 9 months in?
No, because the day before Thanksgiving...
So 8 months, you're still...
I was due originally middle of January.
Okay.
So he was early. Both kids were early. So it was like the day before Thanksgiving. We were supposed to go upstate to see my mom for Thanksgiving, and I went to the doctor, and she's like, "Oh, you're going on bed rest," because I was already like 2 or 3 centimeters tall.
Because I was
standing.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, gravity takes over.
And
so.
Probably, I unfortunately know a little bit of this because Kate had some travails during that pregnancy.
Well, she had two in there.
But you were probably also, at least intermittently, dehydrated doing what you do.
Oh.
Which doesn't help the cause.
Okay.
Yeah.
I definitely was, because I don't think I was thinking about that.
Yeah, that's a big factor in staving off an early...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just thought, I was like, oh gosh, it was just kind of a little bump. And at the same time as it was all going down, Andy was not working at Babbo. He was opening up Casamono.
Uh-huh.
So I think back to this, I'm like, oh my God, we were so fortuitous, because he stopped working at Babbo, wasn't getting any income because he had to open up this second, open up this restaurant. And at the same time, I was on bed rest, and my, you know, the owner of the caterer company, we had talked, he's like, well, what do you want for when you go on maternity leave? Like, there's no rules, we're just making it up as we went. And I said, well, you know, 6 weeks maternity leave is fine for me, that's all I need. Well, then when I went on bed rest, he just sent me a check for 6 weeks pay, which was awesome.
Wow.
But I was like, oh my God, I'm not working anymore. I was just like, this slap in the face, like, I was just like, I have to work. So, how am I going to... It was just... It's something that... I'm not certainly not this, oh, feminist, but it's just something that never entered my mind. But as a woman, if you're going to have kids, it's just... It's a... I don't want to say inconvenience, because I love my kids, but it's such a bummer. You know, you're not in control. You're not in control of what your body's going to do. Like, here I am,
right,
like, going to drop this kid out of me, and I'm going to cook this Christmas party. So,
oh my God! But you're but in terms of the, I think what you just said to me was, though, you never had a desire to be a stay-at-home parent.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Well, and then I did try doing it, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to go.
You guys were already moved to the burbs?
So we had, so I had William, and Casamono opened at the same time, and then it was like such a hard time in our lives. Like, we were just, and then all of a sudden, I wasn't working, and then the caterer, I was like, I don't know what to do, and oh, and then I got hooked up with my first private client. So
okay.
I'm going to do this. And
so this is
like,
how the...
Yeah, that's right. So I
this
talked,
is how the current phase begins.
So I talked to my friend Lori Wolliver, and she hooked me up with a neighbor of someone famous who she was cooking for.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, this is perfect. 2 days a week. This is great. I can hire a babysitter. Just kind of getting my feet wet with the whole juggle. Because I just, the juggle and the struggle is real with a working mom of a baby.
Sure.
And I just didn't know how to do it. And so then I got pregnant again, and it's totally Andy's fault, because I was breastfeeding William, I'm working, and he's 6 months old, and I got freaking pregnant. So I was like, oh God. Okay, here we go. So, I had to go on bed rest again, and then I was just like, oh my God, I was just so frustrated, because I was like, ah, oh. I had to go on bed rest, I think it was like 2 months before she was born.
Oof.
And so, and I had this baby, so it was all very frustrating. And so then the client was, they were young, they were this young couple. And it wasn't, I always felt like they didn't need me, but they wanted me. So when I went on bed rest, I was like, oh, that's going to be it. They're going to they're not going to take me back. And I just knew it. And they didn't, which was fine. But I'm like, okay, here I go again. And so I'm home with my newborn and then and my baby, my two little babies. And then out of the blue, I think it was Joe. And he was like, he said to Andy, he was like, hey, does...
Joe Bastianich.
Yeah, he's like, hey, does Patty, she interested in taking... This is like the easiest chef gig you're ever going to find. And it was a private chef job in Greenwich, one of his old neighbors when he used to live there. And I was with those people. This was a family in Greenwich, and it was full-time. It was Monday through Friday, which was awesome. It was, you know, whenever I get there in the morning until whenever I finish. So I kind of said, all right, I'll get there around 9 and I'll finish up, and I just need to be home in time to relieve the babysitter at 5.
Yeah.
And looking back at that, now that I'm so much more experienced in it, I would have been like, I definitely would have been more forceful with my own ground rules.
Yeah. So without giving away who they are, don't give away any clues that could lead to
I know.
But you got to tell some of this stuff. So first of all, you not only cooked for the humans in the family.
Yeah. The dogs.
You cooked for their dogs.
Cooked for the dogs. And I
was that shocking when you first got asked to do it?
I was so insulted.
You had already taken the job?
Yeah, I already took the job, and this was not in the interview. Like, they made it seem like this plush gig.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we have a... Oh, I don't know how many details I can give away. I can give to. They have this huge ranch out in a mountain town in Colorado. It's beautiful. We have a private jet. You know, if it works for you, we can take you with us. Bring your family if you want. I was like, great. This sounds great. But then it was like when push came to shove, I'm like, I'm not going to bring my two babies and my husband while I'm working. And like, what are they going to do?
Right.
And so I went out there with them a couple times, got terrible altitude sickness. Oh, my God. Like, so bad. But the dogs they didn't tell me about. The staff that I had to cook for they didn't tell me about. The time off wasn't really my time off. It was when they were away, but not even. Like, I still had to show up at their house even when they were away.
Right.
Because they were crazy. So it wasn't stress-free. It was definitely, you know, it paid well, but after doing the math, after paying my babysitter, she was taking home more money than I was. I was like, what's the freaking point?
Right.
And then it got to the point where, you know, the kids had started preschool, and then these people, they had twins, and the wife was like, so you're going to go pick up blah, 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 and I'm going to go pick up blah, 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 because their babysitter didn't arrive until the kids got home.
So all of a sudden you became
all
a
of a sudden I'm
too.
Like driving, picking up a kid from school. I'm like, wait, somebody else is picking up my kid, and I'm picking up their kid. This, what? Like, it just wasn't right. And my kids were starting to realize how long I was away from them, or I thought they did. I know they missed me. And so I actually drew up a plan. I said, all right, I'm going to go, I remember lying in bed with Andy. I'm like, I'm going to go part-time with them. I'll make like three meals. I'll go like twice a week and make like three meals each time. And they had a wood-burning oven in their house, in their kitchen, which was awesome. I'm like, I can marinate stuff and they can cook it if they want or whatever. And I drew it up so that I basically wasn't making any less money because I didn't need the babysitter as much.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is a win-win. Okay, I can do this. And I won't be schlepping their damn kids. And anyway, so did that. So I went part-time.
They went for it?
They totally went for it.
Huh.
And they loved me. I know I had a good relationship with them, even though I was just like, motherfucker, I hate these people right now. So they totally went for it, and their kids were starting to get older, so they didn't really need like the three square meals. I wasn't doing three square meals, but they weren't as much in need of dinner on the table every night. So then I just quit. I was just like, I'm done with these people.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, that's when I started getting into, I don't even know how this happened. I just quit. I didn't have anything. And I was like, I'm going to be a mom. And then I really got bored. I was like, this is not me. I'm going a little stir crazy. So then I kind of put the word out. And then I think Mario was doing cookbooks, a bunch of cookbooks at that point. He asked me to do the recipe testing for it, and I was like, this is a good gig. And I made cover letters and put it out to all the publishers, and I got a few responses, but they were like, well, most of the chefs come with their own recipe testers. Yep. But if we need someone, we'd love to use you, which never happened.
Right.
But what happened after?
I was
recipe testing and I tested for a couple, like 3 or 4 of Mario's books. And I liked it. Oh, and I tore my ACL, my second ACL. So I was like, oh my God, my physical self was screwed again. But I was, in the kitchen sitting on a stool with my leg up, testing recipes, and it was nice money, and it was I didn't have to leave my house.
Right.
I was here for my kids, and
so you were working, but it worked.
I was just trying to figure out my thing.
Yeah.
And then Mario, out of the blue, said, "Hey, are you interested in this?" The basketball player. And I was like, "Oh, private chef." I was like, "Oh," and I was like, "Oh God, I just don't want to do private chefing anymore." Like, I was just I felt so burned out from that experience that I had.
Uh-huh.
And in retrospect, I just didn't realize like how much the people you cook for make such a difference. So, in your old age, you realize like, oh my God, why did I waste my time over there? But so I met with them.
Who was this?
This, the Okafors.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh my God, they're young, they love food, they met Mario and his son at a basketball game or something, and so I've been with them for 5.5 years, and they're just such nice people.
Yeah.
They're real McCoy, like, and we, I'm actually only there now once a week. It did start with 3 days a week, and now they only had a little newborn baby, and now they have 2 kids, and, just their lives have changed, so it's like one day a week. But she kind of became like my agent, and so she recommended, friends. And I actually also have a family here in Hastings who I cook for, and this other woman in Hastings, another client in Hastings who I do parties for. So through the years, it's just kind of started spreading, and I have my usual clients in the city, and then
uh-huh.
I have these other little things that I've had over the years,
like as needed.
Yeah, and it's not as regular as what I have in the city, and it's just all these people are just so nice. And
can you talk about the Okafors for a minute, though? Because when we interviewed for the story,
you
told me that they encouraged you
mm-hmm.
to, because you'd really been working even in the restaurant, in the recipe testing, in your travel, Italian, 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 Italian,
right?
And they encouraged asked you to kind of branch out a little bit.
Well, it was more like, it was kind of like, we love food. We eat anything. There's certain things they don't eat, but we love food. And I just was like, I kind of put it on myself a little bit, even though they said it wasn't explicit what they said, but it was, he was very specific. He's like, I want a really good bone broth. It's like this deep voice. And this is before the bone broth craze. And I was just like, bone broth, it's like stock. I'm like, yeah, I can do that. And like, he went, he's healing. And so I knew that he liked funky things, and they said they really liked really good food. They had the rehearsal dinner at Babbo, and they really felt this connection to it. And that's why I kind of knew what they liked.
Uh-huh.
And so, for like the first year and a half, 2 years, I didn't repeat, because I was like, it was something I put on myself.
Okay, they didn't ask for that.
No, but I was just like, I don't want them to get bored. I'm just going to have fun. Like, I just kind of loosened up a little bit, and I just didn't repeat. And I was like, I'm going to make pho, even though it wasn't, I'm sure, traditional pho. The experts would be like, this is not right, but It tasted right to me. It looked right to me. And I was like, oh, my God, this is fun. And
they were enthusiastic eaters.
Yeah. And I was making, like, I remember Alana at one point, she's like, all right, we can lay off the Moroccan for a little while. Because I was, like, in this Moroccan phase. And then I kind of said, hey, you know, at one point, and it's all from really a Mecca, he's like, why are you buying pasta? I was like, I don't know. I was like, well, do you want me to make it? He's like, well, you know, I just feel like it would be, you know, more healthy. And it probably is, but you can get really good fresh pasta anywhere. But I'm like, you know what? Screw it. I know how to make pasta, like, with my eyes closed. Like, sure. Why am I not doing this?
Yeah.
And I made them by, like, the KitchenAid attachment. And now it's just like, yeah, let's make some pasta. And their daughter was involved in helping me. And, you know, I was like, it's like the Play-Doh thing. And
right.
So, you know, I just started having more fun. I just kind of, and I think I told you this, I just became more confident in my cooking. So the job, just because of, you know, who I was cooking for and what I set out to do for myself, I didn't want to look like a fool.
Right.
And I just decided to cook things I didn't normally cook. And it was like, I'm going to cook some Chinese food. I'm like, God. Like, I started cooking Chinese here because, I don't know about you, there's not really any good Chinese up here. And so I'm like, oh, I'm just going to make it. And I started making it for them, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is so easy.
Yeah.
And it's so good. And, yeah, you know, so anyway, I just didn't repeat for quite a bit.
Okay, so can you just give a sense, because you have, without names and everything else, but give a sense of the breadth of how, because that's how you cook for them.
Yep.
But you have other regular clients, and they each have their own profile, right?
Everyone, yeah, that's all part of it is, I definitely feel like I'm the part of the families, which is, you know, most of these families I cook for in the city have little kids, which is so fun because I love the little kids, and then I can go home and see my big kids.
Right.
So I have one client who's got different dietary restrictions, like vegan, fat-free, sugar-free. And I was like, oh, my God, how am I going to do that? And now I do it. I'm like, okay, I can do this.
Right.
And so now I'm much more confident in the – and, you know, Emeka definitely had some – he went vegan or vegetarian for, like, 6 months. So
you have to roll with that.
Yeah. And I just – I was like, I'm going to just do this. So – it just kind of became fun. It wasn't, you know, back 20 years ago, it would have been really intimidating to me, it's just fun.
Yeah.
I'm just going to take it and roll with it and go for it.
So do you find ways to, this sounds like such a corny term, like, but do you find ways to kind of express yourself within the lanes of each of the different people you cook for?
Like the food, you mean?
Yeah, the way you cook.
Yeah, I'm much, yes. Like,
in other words, it's not just sort of like people, you know, especially with a certain dietary restrictions.
Right.
It's you're finding a way to cook food that you're really happy with, proud of.
Yep.
You're excited to put it in front of them, even though you have this sort of creative challenge put in front of you.
Yeah. In fact, some of the food I make, I'm like, oh, God. How come I don't make that at home? And I'll come home and I'll make it. Yeah, there's always a little hint of patty in there.
Yeah. So that's satisfying.
Yep. Yeah, very.
Uh-huh.
I really like it. But now I'm like, okay, what's next? Because I've evolved. It's taken me a long time to get to this point where I definitely have a choice in who I cook for.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not foaming at the mouth to take on anything.
Right.
I definitely put my stamp on the food.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of doing what I've always wanted to do. So now I'm kind of at this point where I'm like, okay. So where do I go?
So what
from
do I
there?
Do with it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have ideas. In fact, I'm like, oh, I have this love hate. I'm a very frustrated baker going back to baking.
Interesting.
I'm just this one woman in Hastings who, actually she's in the city, but she came to a party that I did in Hastings, and she got me on this trend of doing like past desserts.
Yeah.
Like baby desserts. And I'm like, oh my God, this is such a great idea. Kind of like the Baked by Melissa, you know, trend,
yeah, yeah.
But you know, more like little baby tarts,
yeah,
and whoopie pies or whatever. And but I'm still just like, oh God, I wish this could be so much better if I just was a baker.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit of a frustrated baker in that regard.
Okay.
I'm also.
But that gives you something to work on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said, I was telling somebody, Joanna Prisco, I was like, I have this love hate with catering. Like, I love doing a good dinner party for people, you know,
yeah,
hired as a person to cook, because that's also great money, and it's, you know, once a week, if that.
Well, and it's a crowd, right? Like,
yeah,
it's almost
crowd.
Like a pop-up.
Yeah, it's a little pop-up. Exactly.
Right? But you're not, like...
Yeah.
You don't have to rent a venue.
No, it's just in somebody's house.
Right,
and it's very low-key, and I can make really great food, and I'm proud of it. But I'm still just like, oh, but it's catering. So I kind of like to say it as, I'm still private chefing.
Yeah.
But, you know, just on a little bit of a larger scale.
But the... See, what's interesting to me about the term private chef, right,
mm-hmm,
is for the longest time, and I think some people, I'm sure, still do this, right, but, you know, like I remember 20 years ago, people would say, like, oh, I have a friend. He's such a great home chef, right?
Oh,
and
yes.
Then when I, but when I got a meeting, not a private chef,
yeah,
like someone who was a good home cook.
Right.
And when I started getting around the business, you know, you very quickly learn around the industry, even
yeah,
if you're not directly in it, that a chef is one thing and a cook is something else, and there is
right,
no such thing as a chef at home.
Right.
Except there is.
Yeah.
Private chefs.
I know.
Because you're, like, I always think of chef as someone who oversees a team.
A brigade, yeah.
Right, but if you think about it, there are these
yeah,
now places that have, you know, one-person bands, right?
Right.
Like food trucks.
Right.
Like, we talk about those people as chefs.
Yes, that's true.
We do.
That's true.
You talk about the private chef at the White House. That's the White House chef.
Yeah.
Right? Even
right,
though it's one person.
Right.
You know, they staff up for state dinners and things like
yeah,
that. But, and to me, this is another kind of hybrid. Like, you are a chef. You're
yeah,
there for hire.
Yep.
You're cooking for several people.
Restaurant quality
and
food.
And it's restaurant level food.
Yeah.
Right. And
in fact,
it's your food.
It's my stuff.
Yeah.
In fact, it was Alana, not to talk about them again. But she said something like, this is when I was working like 3 days a week. And she's like, well, we don't even need to go out. Like, why do we need to go out? We have the restaurant right here.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God. It was such a compliment. I don't think she meant it that way. This was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh my God, I never really thought of it that way.
But you do now.
I do. So I feel like, God, I want me at home. God damn it. I don't have me at home, trust me. But on the weekends, I'm present. But
yeah,
yeah, it's a... And I kind of feel like... Yeah, I feel good about when I leave the kitchens where I cook. I feel good about when I leave.
Yeah. And do you feel the creative side? It's interesting because you were not a... You got out of kitchens, professional kitchens, before
right,
you ascended to the level of chef or opened
right,
your own place or whatever, right?
Right.
But do you feel... So you don't have that personally to compare it to.
Right.
You are married to someone who does
right,
that. But do you feel like in this parallel path that you did sort of reach the level of chefdom? Like, does it feel
not
like that to
not
you?
Not really, because I...
It doesn't. It feels like a different thing.
It's because it's a tricky thing, because it's... You know, a private chef. So what does that mean? You're very private. You're
right,
not talking about other people's lives.
Yeah.
You're in people's shit and, you know, not talking about it.
Yeah.
You're just kind of like there but not there.
Yeah.
And it's not a recognized profession. Like I think I said this to you on the phone. I'm like, I'm not going to win a James Beard Award. I'm fine with it because
yeah,
I feel good about my food that I'm making. I feel good about the choices I've made, and yeah.
But isn't there, I'm not trying to be cute about it, but isn't there, though, an element of it that is actually, like, that's actually the same? Isn't the kernel of it the same as what a chef in a restaurant does? Like, yeah. If you strip away...
So the executive chef, what do they pretty much do? Like, they're ordering, they are, you know, managing the people, obviously, but... It's also like, and the sous chefs, they're the ones creating the dish of the day, the special, or whatever, or changing the menu. And I'm like, that's kind of what I'm doing.
Well, that, and also, yeah. You're cooking for, again, all this stuff sounds corny, but it's all true. But you're cooking to make other people happy, right? Yeah. Like, that is the goal.
I was just thinking about that today. Yeah, but that's what goal. You want for your restaurant.
That's
you want
the goal
people to be
for,
happy and
right.
come back.
Yeah, that's the goal yeah. for Thomas Keller.
Right.
That's the goal for Patty Nusser.
Right.
Right. It's that yeah. the kernel of it.
Yeah, you're right.
It seems to me is actually the
on
same.
The very basic.
If you
level.
Strip away all the trappings, if you yeah. strip away the fame, if you strip yeah. the stuff you just mentioned a minute yep. ago, the Beard Awards and yep. the right. If you strip away all of that,
I've got some happy people. I definitely yeah. do, and I'm really happy about it. And I adore these people too, yeah. like on a very personal level.
Yeah.
Like all of them. Are just they're just good people.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel very fortunate. I feel very fortunate.
Great.
And anyway. Anyway, there we go.
Okay, well, speaking of private chefing, we actually paused for a minute during this. I had to call home and have Caitlin do
your
something
chicken.
To the fried chicken.
You're many steps ahead of me.
The prep for the fried. Are you cooking tonight?
Well, I have to cook something. I've got to do some. I'm not...
For your... But no one's here.
Well, Mimi's upstairs.
Oh, Mimi's upstairs.
William's
okay.
somewhere. William's going to eat something at yeah. 11 o'clock tonight.
Okay. So
Andy
that
will come
be.
Home at some point.
Right.
So,
okay.
Anyway.
So you're cooking.
I'll cook something.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll wing it.
All right. Well, thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
I'm delighted we did it.
I know.
It. Yeah.
And we need to... I always say this. We need to get together.
Yes. Well, we'll talk about that off air. The Nussers and the Friedmans are going to
yes.
have dinner sometime soon,
dun, dun,
just so
dun.
You all know. But that's all you get.
Dun, dun,
all right,
dun.
Patty, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's our show for this week. Julia Sexton, thank you for joining me. You were like the Calvary today.
Thanks, Andrew.
I don't know. When I wrote you, you were probably either in bed or still in your night clothes or whatever. It was early.
It was early.
2.5 hours later, you had lined up a space. I was just going to come to your house or something.
Thanks, David.
Yeah, so you had reached out to David. You got us a restaurant to ourselves.
Yeah.
And you came through for me, so thank you for that.
This is fun.
Alicia Matthews and Patty Nusser, thank you for being my guests this week. I appreciate it. I know it wasn't the most normal thing for either of you to do, so thanks for trusting me. To Jeet Paul, our engineer, thank you, Jeet, for splicing these things together every week. And to everyone at Heritage, thank you. And to all of you out there in podcast land, thank you for listening. And we will see you back here next week on Andrew Talks to Chefs.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebrationing happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place, and we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.